Good evening and welcome to the this evening's Grover Beach City Council meeting for August 18th. Can we have the invocation? It will be led by Reverend Gil De La Rosa. He is the Reverend or the Chaplain for the Firefighters Association of Grover Beach and for the Police Officers Association of Grover Beach. And following that, we'll have a flag salute led by Christy Turner.
Let's pray. Our Father, we thank you, Lord, for this opportunity that we have to come to you in prayer. Thank you, Lord, for the power of prayer. Lord, we thank you for all that you do for us, all that you provide for us. And Father, we thank you for this business meeting at hand, and we would pray, Lord, that we would honor you, Lord, and that we would listen to each other. And again, we want to thank you, Lord, for our leaders, Father, of Grover Beach, and our fire department, our police department, all our staff, all our volunteers, our city workers, Lord, our city council, Lord. Now, Lord, bless them and bless Grover Beach and the days ahead. Lots of decisions to be made, important decisions. Father, we want a safe Grover Beach. We want a community we can continue to be proud of and one that will go forward and be progressive and meet people's needs. So, Lord, we give you thanks for tonight. We thank you again for all that you do for us. We would ask that you would protect us and watch over us. We ask these things in your name. Amen.
I think we should be thankful that Gil's been in our lives, too.
Good job. Good job.
Ready?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Pastor Gil and Christy. Normally we have a student do the flag salute, but this, since it's summer vacation, Christy's as close to a student as we could get. And I say that because she has so much energy. She's like a young kid. And she's one of our real great volunteers here in Grover. Thank you. Can we have the roll call, please?
Here.
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 Here. We have closed session announcements on Monday, August 4th, 2003, after meeting in closed session regarding one, conference with labor negotiator, agency negotiator, city manager regarding represented employee group, general employees, SEIU, and two, conference with labor negotiator, agency negotiator, city manager regarding unrepresented employee groups, management and confidential employees. And three, conference with labor negotiator, agency negotiator, city manager regarding unrepresented group, represented employees group, executive management. And fourth, conference with to the podium. We're going to give you some fun stuff.
I like flowers.
The cardboard's yours, Gil.
I like cardboard, too.
Flowers are always good as long as you can hold them. They're not buggy.
Oh, wow. Jill will love.
After 8 months, I'm getting almost where I can work this thing. Anyway, this is a proclamation of the City of Grover Beach, California, a proclamation of appreciation from the City Beach City Council, Grover Beach City Council, to Pastor Gil De La Rosa. Whereas Gil De La Rosa, who is also fondly referred to as Pastor Gil, was appointed to serve on the Grover Beautiful Committee on November 15, 1999, and whereas as a member of the Grover Beautiful Committee, he has contributed countless volunteer hours assisting the city-sponsored events and special projects, and whereas Pastor Gil was appointed as the Grover Beach Fire Department's chaplain in March of 2001, and his participation in department activities during difficult times has continued to bring a healing presence to the department and its members. And whereas in 2001, Pastor Gill also volunteered to serve as the Grover Beach Police Department's chaplain. And whereas Pastor Gill frequently responds to the needs of our citizens by offering a hand to hold and a shoulder to cry on and a calming message during chaotic and sometimes catastrophic emergencies. And whereas Pastor Gill continually exudes a positive and enthusiastic demeanor, giving out holy hugs, warm smiles, and spontaneous acts of courtesy that have brought smiles to the faces of those around him, and his willingness to work, play, and help wherever necessary makes him a strong team player and has recently earned him the title of Kickball Guru. And whereas his integrity and willingness to go the extra mile exemplify diligence and dedication to the community, and his leadership and charismatic attitude inspire others, and whereas Pastor Gill has forged long life friendships with many of our firefighters, police officers, city hall staff, however he and his wife and helpmate Eva will be leaving Grover Beach and to the Grover Beach area to pursue ministerial opportunities elsewhere. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City's Council of the City of Grover Beach hereby desires to publicly recognize Gil De La Rosa in his outstanding leadership and community involvement, and to thank him for having such a positive effect on so many lives in our community. Thank you, Gil and Eva. Would you like to say something?
These guys very much, Dan Criswell and John Bradbury. Kickball. I didn't know it was the guru, kickball, but it was a lot of fun meeting Ron, Martin, my newest friend, tennis partner. By the way, I did beat him twice, but he did beat me last Tuesday, okay, 7-5, and a 6-4. It was a good match, okay? So, Martin, we will play tomorrow.
John, it's been great working with you. I would hope the invocations will continue. Hope that we can find someone that will come and lead the city in prayer. It's very important. I believe in the power of prayer. To all you guys, it's just... And Dee, I just really appreciate all your help and your friendliness, how you accepted me as a pastor to come, and you allowed me to initiate prayer here. And I know that's sometimes a very gutsy move, especially in some city council, some communities. But I think God looks down at Grover Beach and is pleased and it honors him that you have favor with him first before you have favor with men. So again, it's a privilege, and I thank you so much.
And Gil, it has been a privilege knowing you, and I have a lot of respect for you. The fact that you're moving to another calling, you're just going out there and just trying to find out what God's got in mind for you. It's amazing. I think you've got more guts than anybody I know. I mean, I kind of wish I would have the same fortitude and could do the same thing, and I hope you guys, I know you'll have good luck no matter where you go. And thank you for all you've done for Grover Beach. You guys have been awesome. Thank you.
Pastor Gill, I would just like one more holy hug.
Holy hug. You know, I could add to that for you. Maybe we all have comments for him. This is when you talk about a godsend. Maybe God did send him to us because he's been wonderful for our community, and we're sorry to see you go. Very sorry to see you go.
Kathy, did you want to say something too? I know that Gil's been pretty involved in the committees that you've been you've been involved with. I don't know if you want to say something too or.
I could say for appreciation for Gil and his contribution. I mean, everything that was in that proclamation is exactly exuding Gil's dedication and commitment to the committee and the city, and we're very, very grateful and thankful to have him with us while we do. Thank you, Gil.
Thanks.
You will be missed. Our next proclamation is for Sousa Construction. Is there anyone here from Sousa Construction? This is a proclamation for the nice job that Sousa Construction did on the Pike Rehabilitation and Drainage Improvement Project. Since there's no one here, I'm not going to read this. I'll move to something else.
This might go in the Guinness Book of Records tonight. I'm sorry about the last meeting, Mr. Mayor. Thought we'd been friends for a long time. I hope that we still are. And I'm in the middle of San Diego on a Wednesday night at 11:30, and I called home to tell what the score was, and my wife didn't care about scores. She said she'd had some calls about city council on TV. And I apologize to you.
And I apologize to you. I was not very nice.
The only reason why I've been tough is because I think you could go out here as one of the top five mayors of this town in the last, since it was incorporated.
There's only been five.
Oh, really?
Well, I'm only kidding you.
I know how many there's been here. I'm not that
tough. That's why he said that.
But anyway, all I want you to do for the rest of your term is just like those Clydesdale horses, and that I want you to grab a hold of those lines. And I want you to make those horses work. And that's what I would like to see you do, because I think you really could do it. I've seen you on that 1-4. I've seen you on that 2-3. I've seen you on that 1-2. I admire you to vote that way, because it made this town a little bit stronger. And as for the rest of you, constructive criticism never hurt anybody. It's a damn truth that hurts. And you know, while I was there, on the third game, we were playing Long Island, New York. And the man three seats over worked in that second tower that went down. But luckily, his company had told him to leave the day before, and they had a convention someplace. He had two boys on that team. And you know, he told me, he said, you know, this is really something playing at San Diego State University, Tony Glenn Field, and I have my sons in California. He says the attitude has changed in New York considerably since that happened. The people here in California are so nice, so courteous. I said, well, you better not go north. It is in San Diego. But, you know, as he asked me, I was on my cell phone playing, giving the play-by-play to my son because he couldn't go. After coaching the boys over here, 16-0 during the baseball season, four of those boys were on it. And I can say one thing. Those 17 boys from St. Louis County were absolutely remarkable. It took one coach to take care of them. The other teams, it took 3 and 4 to take care of those boys. And some of them got pretty rough. So these newspapers, they talk about all this stuff, you know. And these kids didn't get mentioned. Now, they're going to be someday the next council, the next supervisors. Who knows why? But, you know, that really hurts. When these kids got there, and Saturday night, they played two games, and Saturday they came back Saturday night against San Diego, the best team, and beat them 2-1 and won the World Series. And you know what? Papers don't say nothing. Now, you know, when the guy said, you know, there's only one father in the world that would call and give the play-by-play, I really thought my son deserved that because he couldn't go. And so I'm only asking you to take a hold of the reins and make this a better place. And you know, I saw what you said about down south, right?
Bill Friends.
I have two comments. John, we do appreciate constructive criticism. That's the first one. And secondly, who are you calling a horse? Thank you.
Is there any more public communication? Hey, Howard.
How are you? Howard Conroy, 385 South 8th. I'll try not to say something I have to apologize for later.
join the club. It's sometimes tough.
Well, I suffer from foot and mouth disease. So. Yeah. I met a gentleman or saw a gentleman that I've known for quite a while in a professional position or relationship earlier today, and it was just on my heart to come in and give a few words of support, not only to you because I appreciate what you're doing as far as trying to get a building official, someone that can lighten the load, but also take a lot of the responsibilities, but yet the struggle you have with the fiscal part of it. I saw Matt Bangert earlier today, and with all the accolades that he got while he was employed here, he humbled himself and came to the city requesting to be a part of the job process. And in my dealings with him, and I would say a very, very high percentage of all the contractors within the city, which we're the ones that really do the work, his relationship is one of professional treatment, cordial, I mean, a very, very good representative of the city. And after looking at what you were struggling with last week or 2 weeks ago, as far as trying to put a building official in and the financial burden of that, I thought, you know, here's a guy that could walk right in, no lapse of timing, no training necessary. You could, I'm sure, come to some agreement with his salary and give him that year period to become, to have the proper credentials to be that building official that you want. You could mold him and shape him. And in that year period, you could save, you could send him to get his credentials to take the test that's required. You know, to do the interview process and belabor everything, you don't know who you're going to get. You're going to get somebody that's going to sell you on them. And then you may have to suffer the consequences of, you know, if they just don't turn out. So I just want to, you know, I know it's not your responsibility as far as hiring and firing necessarily, but I just want to impress upon you the option that you have or the city has before them. You know, not everybody can get along in fantastic ways. You know, I mean, a family, a city government is like a family, and every family has weirdness. You know, but I think a man that would come forward and humble himself to his former employers and say, look, you know, I really like working here. I like what I do. And I think the man proved himself to go the extra yard. I think it would be behoove you, really, to use what influence you do have in supporting the recommendation. So I just believe it would be a win-win situation. Thank you.
I've been a volunteer member of local area fire departments for the last 13 years, and for the Grover Beach Fire Department for 11 of those.
Excuse me, Martin?
You have the option of either proceeding at this time or having this basically put on at the time that the item is being considered. Public comment is designed for items that are not agendized.
That's fine. We'll let him speak.
Okay.
This is America.
All right. Thank you. The plan that was presented to the council last meeting represented a change from a stipend to a performance-based compensation plan for department members. The old plan withheld compensation from members who responded to calls but failed to meet attendance criteria. The plan also failed to reward members who time and time again exceeded the minimum standards. For fire drills, the plan presented to council has a per-drill attendance reward. I stress the word reward. This compensates each firefighter for the drills they attend. I strongly feel firefighters should be compensated for each drill they attend. Drills represent a 3 to 4 hour time commitment each week, four times a month. Each drill that a firefighter responds to helps build teamwork and adds value to the community. Under the current plan, if a firefighter can't respond to 75% of the drills, it's the same as if they respond to none. Where's the incentive in that? Per call pay. The plan presented to this council also has a per-call attendance reward. This was intended once again to reward responders who are able and willing to respond. Under the current plan, again, a responder who cannot maintain a 25% call attendance is not rewarded, regardless of drill attendance. Also, responders who exceed the standard are not rewarded for their increased effort. The proposed plan provides per-call pay for personnel that meet the 75% drill attendance requirement, The more calls they respond to, the greater their per-month reward. I would not be opposed to paying a per-call incentive to personnel that don't meet the 75% drill attendance requirement. They may not have the skill set of a 75% drill attendee, but many of our personnel that can't meet that drill attendance requirement work full-time shift for the ambulance or full-time fire departments. Do they add value? I think they do. Staffing. One council member stated last meeting that two personnel from the ambulance supplemented with two fire personnel was enough. I wish that council member had been with me on the CPR call this Saturday, because two people off the fire department and two people off the ambulance were not enough. We needed additional personnel. It was also stated, was there a need to respond personnel to a jurisdiction that was having staffing provided by their opposite? The fire service provides a critical function. This means time lost getting to a scene, then requesting resources you need can have a dire impact on the outcome of the incident. It's certainly safer for the people involved, both emergency responders and the public, to have the resources available and then release the ones not needed, especially when the resources are covering an approximate 5-square-mile area in a population of 20,000 people. Community. One council member stated in the last meeting that the council owed it to the community to provide a long-term solution to providing basic fire service protection. I'd say that it's equally incumbent on the council to provide short-term solutions until the long-term solution is found. If the fire department is returning to the council on a frequent basis, shouldn't we consider that they are trying to provide service to the community and that they are asking the council for the tools they need to do?
Okay, well, moving to consent agenda at this point, we have items 3 through 9 are on the consent agenda. We've been asked to pull item 9. I'd like to pull item 8. Are there any other items that anyone would like to have pulled for a separate consideration or discussion? David?
6.
Okay, David says 6. Anyone else? Okay. I would entertain a motion for 3, 4,
I move items 3, 7. 4, 5, and 7.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Yes.
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 Yes. Item number 6, proposed 2-year agreement with SEIU employees. Dave, do you want to
start for quarter? I just wanted to make some comments on it. These are my comments. I don't know if there's any other support for them, but I'm trying to make this positive, but... this is the employee negotiation, salary, wages, and benefits. And once again, we struggled to be competitive with other cities and comparable. And we allowed increases well above cost of living raises or the cost of living in our community. We keep trying to keep up and bump up and stay comparable with other public entities. And I think that if we now made a comparison of civil service versus private industrial standards, we'd find that we are out of whack. And I'm not just saying us, I'm saying all of the public service government jobs. If you look at comparisons of wages, of health benefits, of dependent care, of vacation, sick leave, holidays, I think it's... tilted quite a bit in favor of public employees now. And I want to try and make this positive. We appreciate the employees we have. That's the struggle that we keep making to more than allow raises that keep a standard of living equal. We're trying to raise above cost of living, but this is a 2-year agreement. And I think we have to sometime or other say that we have maxed out our capability to keep up with everybody. If we can't keep up and people find that they can do better other places, perhaps we'll have to remain the stepping stone, training ground, or whatever you want to call it, because we cannot keep this up. And again, these are my points. And now I'm listening to the fire department that wants more and more, and I'm wondering, all of a sudden I was wondering, who's running that fire department? I'm getting really irritated at Lance right now, but I'm going to stay on this other subject. We need to recognize our ability to pay, and whatever it takes for us to look at that, and if it is a percentage of our total general fund or some other percentage, rather than always just allowing more and more of our total income to go towards salaries. We need to spend some time looking at that comparison and saying it can't go past this percentage or something, rather than just trying to keep up with everybody else, regardless of the impacts. Because the higher our wages go, the less money we have for other services that are for our citizens. So,
and I have to pay my own. So I think that hit us when we didn't expect it. It really did. So I think we have to look at the insurance companies also, not just the employees themselves, and us as employer. We didn't expect that kind of jump either.
John?
Yeah, well, Dave, I think those are great points, and I would agree with you that at some point we have to have that discussion. If this is a policy issue where we're talking about a percentage of the general fund going for wages, and one of the other things that I've been always talking about is when we get to the issue of pay or compensation packages, we need to understand, you know, what are we limiting and who are we recruiting? As long as we discuss and everyone's on board and everyone understands that, I think that all the information will be up front. And so people who are employed here or the council understands what the rules are when we sit down and start doing these negotiations. But I think you're right. We need to at some point discuss a policy so that we can all be on the same page.
Dave, I'd like to chime in here, too. I'm glad you pulled this item because I think you're right in almost everything you've said there. Actually, I can't find fault in anything you've said. And one of the things that you did say that we don't really do is we really don't look at the private sector. We don't compare our employees and their salaries to miners, to Mid-State Bank, or to California Fine Wire. We only compare our employees to other communities, Rio Grande, Pismo Beach, et cetera, et cetera. And I think a lot of times if we looked at what the employees that are in these private sector make, our employees would probably feel like they're pretty darn lucky. When you look at their health benefit package alone, it's a great package. And I agree with you in the fact that they're very important, they're very valuable, and it is a real chore to try and help, you know, not a chore, but it's up to us to try and maintain them. They're very valuable, and they do a good service for us. So it's a real double-edged sword. You want to do the best you can, but in the long run, you have to look at just what the money you have in your finances, your financing available. And so I, too, will be voting for this, but I'm glad you pulled that, and I'm glad you made some comments because it's really tough. Mr. Lieberman.
Thanks. I too, agree with a lot of things you said, David, and it's that fine line. It's the fine line between salary versus benefits package, and I see there's some contractors in the room, for example. It'd be interesting to find out what do they pay their employees and do they pay their benefits as we do. And I think those are differences that we all need to have knowledge of to make the best decisions we can. I, too, commend our employees, and we're doing the best we can, but at some point we're going to see that intersection on the graph where the ability to pay is impacted, and I think it would be some good legwork for our next round. So I support the contract as well.
With that, I'd entertain a motion, I guess.
With that, I'll move that we adopt a resolution approving the proposed two-year MOU with the SEIU, adopt a resolution amending the annual appropriation resolution to provide funding, and three, adopt a resolution amending the city's classification and compensation plan for miscellaneous employees.
A second.
We have a motion and a second. Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Yes.
The jobs that we provide, looking at the job specifications and determining where they're comparable, and also to look at the ability to pay. So that is something that is incorporated in the agreement that you just approved, that we would do that before the next agreement. In fact, we would do that before the 1st of January of 2004, or 5, sorry.
And in response,
there's comparable with other cities is your study, and that's not what we're talking about.
Broaden it,
and percentages of some fixed income for the city, general fund perhaps would be the one, but to look at a historical basis versus now and into the future as a way of maximizing the ability to pay. So it can't go over 62% or some number. I don't care what it would be, but that type of issue, I think. And it's just a discussion. We now have a right. 2-year agreement. We don't need to do it next meeting or something, but the point was that I think we need to start on this and resolve it and then have it everybody's comfort zone.
If I can jump in here, I mean, one of the things we are always talking about is trying to give staff clear direction and that it's coming from a council majority and not one. So in an effort to try and improve our direction-given ability, that's why I brought that up.
This might be a council goal for next year.
That's a good point. Okay. Would you like to answer my question, Mark?
Okay.
It is your choice. You can request at this time that it be agendized, or you can do that during council comments. Council may want to consider waiting until such a report is perhaps prepared or in draft stages before we discuss these issues.
Yeah, I would agree with that. What do you guys think?
Sure.
Okay.
Okay, I had asked to pull item number 8, which is the DUI enforcement project. Chief, can you give me a little more information on that? Is this a one-time event?
John Bradbury, Chief of Police, California Highway Patrol, received $7,800 to spend on DUI enforcement. And they've decided to spend it on checkpoints. So what today's resolution is that if passed by the council, we would supply manpower, and they would supply manpower. They would pay us to do it. It's a checkpoint that will be set up somewhere in South County. What you need to remember, one of these DUI checkpoints is labor-intensive. You have anywhere from 11 to 15 people out there. So this $7,800 will not go far. It was meant to be used all over the coastal division of the Highway Patrol, which was from Santa Cruz to Ventura County line. The $7,800 won't go very far, so they're limiting it to San Luis Obispo County, ourselves, Pismo, Arroyo Grande, Morro Bay, and I believe Atascadero and San Luis Obispo have already passed the resolutions to tap into this money.
Is this a one-night thing or something?
This is an OTS grant.
Okay, I just want to make sure it wasn't one night because it's just kind of like doing a sweep on Grand Avenue for people that are in the crosswalks one time a year. It really doesn't put too much of an imprint in people's memory. It's kind of, in my opinion, worthless.
But we did one of these on Memorial Day. The Highway Patrol one that we're talking about in this grant will probably be in December. We'll probably do our own in December. Plus, we'll work on the extra patrol at Christmas time for DUI enforcement.
Okay. Does anybody else have any questions?
Nope.
Okay. Okay, I would entertain a motion then, I guess.
I'd like to make a motion that we adopt agenda item number 8, the DUI enforcement project.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Roll call vote, please.
Yes.
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 Yes. Motion passes unanimously. Item number 9, appointments to the Grover Beautiful Committee. And Kathy Petker is going to come up and do a little presentation.
Mayor and City Council members, Kathy Petker, Recreation Manager. The Grover Beautiful Committee has 3 vacancies currently, 2 from 2 expired terms and 1 through a resignation. The city has advertised the positions and 11 applications were received. After the applications were received, interviews were conducted by the Advisory Body Screening Committee on July 31st, and they met again to deliberate on August 6th. For a variety of reasons, 7 applicants withdrew their application from the committee opportunity. The 4 remaining applicants for consideration were Diane Bonnier, Linda Dominguez, Leah Greeley, and Samuel Greeley. The Advisory Body Screening Committee recommends that the City Council make the following appointments: Diane Bonnier, for the unexpired four-year term, and Linda Dominguez and Leah Greeley for the other the four-year terms to expire in 2006. Based on the alternatives provided to the City Council, the Screening Committee recommends that the City Council, one, accept the Screening Committee's recommendations, adopt the resolution appointing Diane Bonnier to fill the unexpired four-year term expiring on December 31, 2004, and Linda Dominguez and Leah Greeley to four-year terms expiring on December 31, 2006. We would also like to introduce the newly appointed committee members. Is there any questions of staff?
Guess not.
Okay. If you'd like to...
We'll entertain a motion first. How's that?
I'll make a motion. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Steve?
I'll make a motion to adopt the appointments to the Grover Beautiful Committee.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Can we have a roll call?
Well, we're having discussion there on that.
Yeah, discussion. Sure that's right. That's
are you sure you're not going to create a little marital strife if you appoint one? Have you talked to them about this and not the other?
Actually, they said it was going to be a team effort.
That's
and,
what
and
I think.
And if we got one, we'd get both of them, and that's kind of why we did that.
Wonderful.
We had some great applicants. It's always hard to...
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
Okay. We're moving into public hearings at this time. We have an appeal of the Planning Commission decision of July 8, 2003, and that's item number 10, and I believe Dee and I both have a conflict on this one, and so we're going to turn over the hammer, gavel, whatever this is, to Mayor Pro Tem, John Scholes.
Wow.
You sure you want to do that?
Boy, I really like this job. Okay. As stated, this is an appeal of a Planning Commission's decision approving a single-family residence at 842 Saratoga. May we have a staff report, please?
Thank you, Councilmember Schultz. My name is John Knight. I'm a contract planner in the Community Development Department.
There we go. Again, I'll start over quickly. My name is John Knight. I'm a contract planner with the Community Development Department. I had an opportunity in July to prepare a staff report for a proposed single-family, two-story residence at 842 Saratoga. This went before the Planning Commission on July 8th. There were several concerned citizens that came to the meeting. They expressed several concerns, which I'll detail briefly. The project was ultimately approved. It is a single-family, two-story home, 3,861 square feet. It will replace a small structure that's in fairly poor condition on the site today. Two conditions were added. One is that the portico be reduced to one story in height, and then also that the roof deck, the second story roof deck, be reduced also. Issues raised by the project was appealed, and issues raised by the planning Planning Commission hearing and raised by the appellants include a concern regarding the hearings and a potential and a conflict of interest. Ultimately, only three members of the Planning Commission were able to vote on the project. The project was approved. Staff feels that the hearing was in order, proceedings were in order, and the city attorney is here also, who is at the Planning Commission, can answer any additional questions on the proceedings themselves. In terms of privacy, I think the main concern that was raised by the neighbors is the potential for the second-story roof deck and the future home looking down on the neighbors. That was conditioned to be removed, and I think that addresses that concern. The neighbors were concerned about the project being large. It is a fairly large home. Again, it's almost 4,000 square feet. However, the front of the home is fairly small in size. They've actually taken the garage and moved it to the back of the site. They meet all of the objective standards, height, landscaping, setbacks, coverage, meet or exceed all of those standards from the street itself. I don't feel it will appear to be a large structure because they have made an effort to meet all of the standards and do have the garage actually tucked back under the under the project, under the house. The another concern, again, was not feel that the approval of the home would result in a needless and substantial view blockage. There are alternatives. I want to mention there are alternatives in terms of design that the applicant could consider that would reduce the view impacts on the neighbors, especially the immediately adjacent neighbor. However, staff recommends that you approve the project consistent with the Planning Commission and deny the appeal. I'd be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Thank you, John. Anyone questions of staff?
I had one. And what is your staff's recommendation for the roof deck? Now, it was denied. I mean, it was taken out of the plans at the Planning Commission, and now it's being asked to be reintroduced.
Our original recommendation of the Planning Commission, we did not have a concern about the roof deck. It wasn't until we later heard the concerns by the neighbors regarding privacy. I think it's a reasonable condition given the size of the home and the fact that it would be looking directly down onto the neighbors too. So we support the condition as added by the Planning Commission.
And so you're suggesting that if we did approve this project, it would not allow the roof deck?
That's correct. That would be consistent with the commission's recommendation.
Was there any discussion about access or egress, whatever, the fire-related issues on that?
To the roof deck?
The roof deck.
Not at the commission meeting.
Okay.
It is, as you know, and I think as the applicant will testify, there are quite a few roof decks, some of which were approved fairly recently. In terms of meeting code requirements, I don't think that's really a problem.
Okay. I'm just trying to get clear what your staff recommendation is on the roof deck, and it is to uphold the Planning Commission's denial of the roof deck.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Steve, any questions?
I'm going to hold back after a public hearing.
Okay. With that, I'm going to open up it to public comments. I just ask that, I know everyone, this is an emotional issue. Let's try not to repeat comments, and let's try and keep our comments down to the 3 minutes. I will allow the applicant 5 minutes to present the item. So with that, Ms. Perkins.
Ron Perkins, 590 North 10th Street, Grover Beach, California. I'm the applicant. My family and myself, my wife and my four children are the proposing this project be approved, or actually be denied. The application, let me get this right, that it would be denied. However, we've asked that the council would hear a condition on the roof deck. We feel it's a very important issue in this town, and that we went over a couple issues and asked for your consideration on the roof decks. I presented the council a package on, I believe, August 15th. Did everybody receive that?
Yes.
In it was a letter asking, and I think planning has received a copy of this as well. For the record, I want to make sure that the staff originally approved our plan, our deck, and had no problems with our deck originally. So I respect his opinion of not wanting it now. I wanted to talk about a couple issues, first of which, I had a list of other decks. There's one on 10th Street. Sure. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Again, this I think roof decks are a valuable tool when we're limited to a beach area that and beach community that we're in. The lots are very narrow, and it's very beneficial for an area to where we don't have acres and acres to spread out. It allows us to get a little more space on our lots, and it's a challenging area that we live in. I'll acknowledge that. So. These are some of the homes that are currently have second-story decks right now. I'm sure you've probably already driven by. These are all on the north area of Grand Avenue. And these are current decks. The one on the right, three on 10th Street, 342 10th Street, that was approved in 1997. course, the one on the proposed one was approved, I guess, last meeting. In addition, you had some decks that we found in a neighboring community. And this is one community. Pismo Beach has several second-story roof decks allowed. And let's see if I can get pictures. I believe you've seen pictures of these as well. And they go with a nice design. I think if they're done properly, as the Planning Commission has directed the 342 Newport job, it can be done right. Here's one at 353 North 3rd. .252 North 3rd. These are our neighboring communities. Shows all the different narrow lots that we're, you know, confronted with here in Grover Beach and challenged with, and how you can maximize that area and take full advantage of our community that we live in, you know, the view. I wanted to draw attention of privacy. And if you would look at this view right up here, this top view, there's a person standing on the very top on the right-hand corner. And
are those all in Oceano, that whole sheet?
No.
They're on 25-foot lots?
These are on
Strand?
Yes, these are down in Oceano.
Right.
These are the one. This is Grover Beach, though. This is a 50-foot lot, the same lot that I'm proposing. And the view, the peripheral vision of the view is straight out to the horizon. And if I may, the picture down below here, this represents the wall, and my neighbor's directly concerned about the privacy issue. You won't even see their land on the second-story deck. If I was on a first-story deck, I would have more view of their backyard from my peripheral vision than I would if I was on the third store, and if I was on 10 stories or the top of the, you know, Empire State Building. You see less down below than you do up above. And so I really believe the impact of a second-story deck is actually less impact and less has less privacy issues than a first-story deck. So I wanted to have you please take that for consideration. There was an argument of a view blockage, and this is a picture of my neighbor's yard, Kimberly Sutton. And the one area, you can see my poles up to the left. May I approach this? And this area right here was the only area. These are already trees. This area right here was the area that affected my neighbor. She still has whitewater views and wave breaks and ocean dunes and a substantial view, as the planning department has told you as well. I've tried, this may seem like this is the first time, but this process actually started. Before I came to the planning department. I try to do a round table, a tailgate. I try to talk to my neighbors. I've had several projects within Grover Beach that I've done the same thing. My house, where I currently live, the Evans house on 9th Street, the corner of 9th and Atlantic City, I did the same thing. I talked to the surrounding neighborhood and tried to talk to them about how we're going to design this house and build it, present it to them. And a lot of cooperation, I believe, on my part went into it before it even got to the planning department. So there was a lot of consideration that I tried to listen to my neighbors and help them in their decision and make it a little less painful for them. I know nobody wants any growth. If you've got your two-story house there, I don't think anybody really wants somebody to put something there. It's unfortunate. My neighbor across the street from me built her two-story house and blocked part of my view. But, you know, that I don't think would make me move from Grover Beach. I still love this area. I can get out on the street and see the ocean in a minute. So I'd like your consideration for the roof deck to be addressed here. The one prior to mine was approved. with the roof deck, and I don't think it's a bad thing, and I appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. Before you go, does anyone have any questions of Ron?
Not at this time.
I had one just about your plans. Could you tell me what the loft area is on the second floor, right next to your master bedroom? Is that just kind of an open area? Or
yeah,
is that
I have the four kids, and my wife is a school teacher, ex-school teacher. And so homework is a huge issue in our family. And that area was designed specifically for a computer area, for the kids to do a homework or a desk area for a homework area, like a common area that the kids could use a computer, print their reports, do their stuff. That's what that area is for. I would invite, I believe, a lot of you to come over to my house and see my children and know that I do have four boys, and my whole design of my house is to try to keep my children at home. And I would like to make a real quick point. I appreciate it. My house currently is 3,200 square feet right now, and it's not big enough. I need a little bit more room. I have four, like I said, four teenage, almost teenage boys. Three of them are teenage. One's not. So it gets really busy around our house. So it's not very big. If I had my way, I'd love about 6,000 feet. But I don't know anywhere in Grover where I can build a 6,000-square-foot house. So that's not going to happen. So each one of the boys have their room. We're trying to give each one their room and create that area for them. So.
Great. Thank you. Someone else like to speak?
Hi, good evening. My name is Sky Larsh, and my property is at 824 Saratoga Avenue, just to the west of the house that we are hearing about. Again, with all due respect to Mr. Perkins and his outstanding design of homes, which again, I have seen his house around the corner, so that is absolutely not in question. It is just my husband and I. We do not have children. We currently have a 1,400 square foot house at 824 Saratoga. We bought our house in 1997 because it had so much charm and character with the neighborhood. These were homes that, while we saw other homes being built that were two stories and so forth, they all kept fairly large yards. They were pretty much kept to a minimum of about 2,800 square feet with ample setbacks so that you didn't have these towering walls between the homes, and that was a really important feature for us. And so as we begin to look at the design of Mr. Perkins' house, we see a house that is just extremely large for that lot in that particular neighborhood. And when I look at the neighborhood, I'm looking from 8th to 9th Streets, houses on both sides. That's our neighborhood there. And there are no homes that would be similar to the one that we are looking at this evening. On the west side, then, what we are going to confront is basically a house that goes practically all the way into our backyard, maybe with just a little area left over where there is no house to the east of us. And then, of course, it is immensely tall, 25 feet tall, and with the subterranean garage, it really looks almost like an apartment building wall that would be there. One of the issues that we have is not only into our backyard, but we have windows that go all across the back part of our house, and so we have now his master bedroom windows, bathroom windows, and if permitted, the roof deck looking directly into our windows that are there that we would, of course, need to take care of through spending money for privacy if that in fact goes through. So that is a concern also. My point in being here is really that we bought into the neighborhood, as I've described, because of the character of that neighborhood, which the other neighbors that have built seem to have honored. And in essence, to preserve the house that we have, we are here to appeal the immense size of the house. We would certainly like to see if there was any possible way to make it just not so long. I mean, that's the main concern for us, that it goes way, it extends beyond the front part of our house, way beyond the back part of our house, and is very tall. And so our main concern is that it just becomes this massive structure. And I thank you for your time this evening and allowing me to speak.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions?
Just a question. Did you share your views with Mr. Perkins before he drew it up? Did you work with him on the plan?
I appreciate you asking that question. Actually, Mr. Perkins indicates that he approached all of his neighbors. I can't speak for the other neighbors who are here tonight, but he did not ever come to us. It was merely incidental that on the day that we were to have our architectural review, we ran into him because he was over at Mrs. Sutton's house, and we came to kind of take a look at what we were going to be dealing with that evening. So it was merely a matter of incidents that we ran into him on that day. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else?
Ed Becerra, Jr., 886 Saratoga. City Councilman Scholes, Lieberman, and Ekbaum, a very good evening to you all. The following are my issues of concern regarding the building of Mr. and Mrs. Perkins' home on 842 Saratoga Avenue. Number one, the project would result in an encroachment of the privacy of Kimberly Sutton, Doug, and Sky Hessing. Their home privacy if you allow a roof deck to be placed above the second floor of this vehicle, of this home, excuse me. Example being, in reality, what would occur if the acceptance or approval of this top deck would lead to invasion of privacy with intrusion and solitude? Number two, the project is too large as designed, and the design is inconsistent with the adjacent homes surrounding the project. If I may, I would ask if this, the councilman would turn to page 3 of the staff report. It says City Council staff report prepared by Mr. John Knight here, the contract planner under the heading of alternatives. He provided several alternatives. There's four of them. I'd like to address one or two, if I may. Provide direction to the applicant on how to modify the project and direct the applicant to return a modified project to the building commission. Modifications would include items such as reducing the second story portion of the home to minimize the impact on ocean views, reducing the overall height or reducing the square footage of the home, i.e., the project blueprints indicate a 600 square foot great room. To have the applicant reduce the great room to approximately 400 feet or so. In essence, instead of this particular great room running east and west, to run a north and south direction would minimize both bedrooms on the second floor or other rooms to a reduction in size and would lower, if not draw, the home closer to Saratoga rather than the back portion of this property. This would alleviate the large portion, which is on page 2 of the staff report, of the blockage of Ms. Kimberly Sutton's home. A photograph was shown or was pointed out on the overhead projector, I believe, by Mr. Perkins, that a small portion between tree 1 and tree 2, for example, would alleviate or would be the blockage of her view. That is correct, but he forgot to state that Ed Becerra lives two homes over, and my home, the whole section is going to be taken, not just those two trees. Lastly, I would implore to the City Council that we, as public members, for your support and consideration in allowing the appeal to stand on the merits of the betterment of the community, and more importantly, in keeping of the insurance slogan, quote, good neighbors, end of quote. I believe your decision and recommendation will have a vast impact on what you as City Council members perceive as good neighbors. And your decision may possibly set precedence in the future development and growth in this fine city. Thank you for your utmost attention in this matter.
Thank you, Mr. Fitzgerald. Anyone have any questions? Great, thank you.
Good evening, City Council members. Kimberly Sutton, 868 Saratoga Avenue.
As you all know, I'm here tonight to appeal some of the City Planning Commission's findings regarding the home being built west of mine at 842 Saratoga. First, I feel the project is too large for the lot it's being built on. It is simply an oversized building on an undersized lot. The first paragraph on the city's general plan states, and I quote, "The district is intended as an area for development of detached one- or two-story buildings with, quote-unquote, substantial yards. This 3,861-square-foot home on an undersized nonconforming lot does not meet this definition, even if the building, as currently drafted, meets setback requirements. Furthermore, it does not fit in with the surrounding homes that average in a size of between 800 and 2,400 square feet. I simply question what kind of growth and development we as a community would like to see going forward. Do we want to see a massive concrete jungle, or do we want to see carefully designed community that continues to grow and prosper and is designed to both beautify and bring in neo-traditional homes? Second, I agree with the decision made by the Planning Commission on July 8th with regards to the second-story rooftop deck. This deck represents a massive invasion of privacy, and there is not a policy written on the city's general plan allowing second-story rooftop decks, which could be construed as a third story. Think about the visual impacts it would have if every house on the block had a second-story rooftop deck. Second-story rooftop decks are literally and figuratively over the top. I believe policy should be written, and we should nip these entities in the bud. I ask the council right now to align with the Planning Commission's findings regarding this issue and eliminate second-story rooftop decks. Finally, I appreciate the council's consideration and ask that the project is approved in line with the Planning Commission's July 8th, 2003 recommendations while considering concerns I have addressed here tonight. And one last plea. As currently drafted, the design of this building creates a vision not unlike that of a solid two-story wall from my viewpoint, from my home's location. And I believe that embellishments could be drawn into the plans that would make the structure more aesthetically pleasing from my view. I do have to live with substantial view blockage. I understand that's a moot point with regards to what how it's been described earlier in both the Planning Commission and in this meeting as well. However, maybe we should take a look at how we are building the edifices on these lots. One last point I wanted to bring up is that Mr. Perkins does make statements saying that he did hold roundtable or tailgate discussions with all of us with regards to what he was going to do with this lot. I first came across these plans. He came whizzing up, and he was on his cell phone. He unscrolled the plans and said, "This is what it looks like." I said, "That's a pretty building." That's about all it was. Then he did, at a later date, leave me with some plans, and then I had a friend of mine that is a general contractor help me decipher the plans. And once I was completely done and understood what was being built next to me, when Mr. Perkins picked up the plans, we had questions for him, and he said, quote-unquote, "If I had known you had had somebody with a trained eye been looking at those, I wouldn't have given you the old plans." So even when I was given an opportunity to see plans, they weren't the plans that were even going to be the ones that would, at an end point, be used for this lot. So anyway, I do appreciate the council's consideration on this issue. And that, again, I hope that we can resolve this issue of the second-story rooftop decks so that they are not allowed, and that the large large size of this house be addressed with regards to the slot size. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sutton. Does anyone have any questions? Would anyone else like to speak?
Hello, my name is Mike Conley, a friend of the Kimberly Sutton, live at 561 Trouville. The issues in some of the items here, even the Planning Commission was trying to have them redesign the building due to the fact of the mass of the building, how it looked, and especially from Mrs. Sutton's view. One of the commissioners or Planning Commission people also denied the project because he said Michael Leon overbuilding, top deck construction not in line with the adjacent homes, too small of a lot for a 5,000 square foot edifice. And so even the people on the Planning Commission and staff knows that this building is too large for this lot. That lot, your R1 zoning calls for a 60 foot minimum lot width. This is 49.92 feet, 50 feet. So I understand why Ron is saying that it's difficult to build a house in this area, because when you try to take a square peg and put it in a round hole, it's hard to fit in there. And then to top it off with a roof deck that does take people's privacy is absurd. You know, it's like, the Mother Goose or the chicken and, something else. It's just doesn't fit the area. And and there's different issues that were brought up before about because of the encroachment on the front area, the trees that will be planted. According to the general plan, five trees need to be put up there. That front area is so small, there's no way five trees are going to be replaced to put in that area. There's many little issues that are just being, swept under the carpet here when you look at it. And people aren't looking at it real closely. And, people, and why I feel sorry for, Mrs. Sutton and those people in that area, they saw what the new homes were being built in that area. If they wanted to live in Rancho Grande, they would have moved up there. They wanted that style of a neighborhood, not the mass. And so thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Good evening, Council. Don Moore, 221 Parkview Avenue. On the issue of view, you guys had your fifth goal setting. Your highest one, fifth, was a view shed analysis of the northwest Grover Beach. I didn't think you had a view problem in the remainder of the city. On the issue of roof decks, I need you to tell me the discretionary boundaries of approval or denial. As you know, my roof deck was denied for, quote, roof decks do not belong on two-story homes. Yet the Planning Commission is approving more than they are denying. Here are some of the quotes the commissioners have about roof decks. June 10th, Ms. Versaw, 447 Newport Project. Versaw, the roof deck gave appearance of being an afterthought. She also concerned that there was no guidance zoning ordinance regarding roof decks to a two-story home. That would be an intrusion of privacy to a neighbor or create a third story. Well, the building code clearly defines stories for you. This would not be a third story. Got continued to the July 8th meeting. Versa asked applicants if they would consider eliminating the roof deck from the design, since most decks were on single-family homes. Now was her point of view. She commended the applicants for their efforts to create a feelier project. She stated, however, that for privacy reasons, she could not live next to a residence with a second-story roof deck. She stated that there was, again, nothing in the zoning code to address decks. She asked staff to agendize discussion at a later date to formulate guidance and policy on roof decks. Comlinson stated that commission had recently denied a similar project because of her roof decks, which I assume was my project, and asked the city attorney if there was any liability issue. Apparently he asked some concern in his decision makings. Leon stated that the applicants were within the parameters of the existing zoning ordinance, which I concur. He stated he would like to see the deck designed as not to be visible from the street and suggested using a solid rail. Project approved. Our design was not visible from the street and located in the center of the house and not near the building edges or setbacks. Ours is denied. On July 8th, also, the 635 Seabright, I spoke to the designer, and he said he has a roof deck on that also. I have not seen the plans myself that you have here in the city. I have seen plans at his office. Here's the discussion. Two-unit PUD open to the public. Hearing designer came to podium to answer questions. Chair Collinson closed public hearing. Leon stated the project was an improvement of the two parcels that would provide affordable housing. Myers stated it was a good project that maximized the use of property that was underutilized, and the project was consistent with the neighborhood. Versal stated it was a good addition to the neighborhood. Not even a word about a roof deck. Project approved. Roof decks have been approved in every planning area in the city, and precedence has been set. These denials are no different. So please tell us now what apparent criteria, past, present, for approving or denying roof decks is, so we may have fair treatment of properties and development rights, as so many have in the past or present, from the Planning Commission and the City Council. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak to this?
Hi, Doug Hassine, 824 Saratoga Avenue. My wife spoke earlier, and I'll be brief. I just wanted to add a couple things that I didn't hear. One of them is that being on the east side of the house that's being proposed, the setback is 5 feet from our fence, and that two stories above. If you were to impose our house onto this, I realize this is the west view of it, but if this was the east view,
our house would be probably about from here to here, about this big.
And so you can see how we will be looking up at something that's only 5 feet away, that's towering over us. And what that area, the roof deck and the top balcony and the top windows, and I believe even the lower windows that are in, I think, the great room, those will be looking into our bathroom. Those will be looking into our shower. And we currently have a shower that has a patio outside with a fence that's high enough that it's private inside, but we enjoy a nice view of the sunrise and the beautiful hills and some of the dunes. So that's the privacy issue and the towering issue over our house and our backyard and privacy that is a concern to me. A little bit breaking with my friends that are also opposed to the project, I would be willing to discuss the roof decks a little bit because I'm not completely opposed to all roof decks that are done tastefully. I think that the previous speaker that spoke on behalf of them, that talked about them being set back from the edges of the house in such a way that you don't look over the corner down into the backyards, but you look out, as Ron pointed out into the neighboring area. You know, once the area gets built up and everybody has a two-story house, those the lower level views they're going to be substantially, you know, limited, whereas the roof decks will be nice additions. I don't think that I have had a chance to actually see where the roof deck on this current project is being proposed, and I believe that it would probably be a bit closer to the side of the house than I'd like and peering down onto my backyard, but that's not to say that in general I don't think that eliminating roof decks from the area is necessarily something that's beneficial to the community. Thank you for taking the time to listen to me.
Thank you, Mr. Hassing. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak to this issue?
Hi, my
Beverly Diggles. I live at 358 Atlantic City. And while I sympathize with their neighbors and their situation here, I do want to say I want to support two-story building, two-story houses in Grover Beach. And I think people have property rights they should be able to go forward with. And when you go to the city and you get their ordinances and you get their guidelines and you design a project that's within those guidelines and those ordinances, that the city should live by them. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Diggles. Anyone else like to speak on this project? Okay, going once, going twice. With that, I'm going to close the public comment period and bring it back to the council. Dave, would you like to start discussion on this?
Sure. Let me get organized here a little bit. I'm going to mention something that's called Good Neighbors, and it was brought up by one of the speakers, but I'm not really chiming in with him. But when you live out in the country and you're 2 miles from your neighbors, you can do whatever you want with your building, and it doesn't affect them. It doesn't have a negative effect on them. And I think that's a definition of a good neighbor, is not a negative effect on your neighbors. As we move closer together, I think that definition is still there. You're trying not to have a negative effect on your neighbors. That's a good neighbor policy. When you get into a community and cities and you're on 50-foot lots and building 10 feet away, we'd like to see everybody continue that good neighbor policy. Obviously, it doesn't always work, but we'd like to see everybody work towards that. And with that, there's some real positives with this project. It's a beautiful street view. I haven't heard anybody complain about the architecture from the front. They're glad to see that tree gone. They're glad to see the old house gone. They're welcoming me to the community. There's no objection to this two-story. So the only issue is the size of the whole building and the roof deck. And there was some talk about the great room being too large. That's an awfully big great room, but that's your choice. I sure hate to get involved in redesigning the interior of a building. I don't know if that's where we belong. And if you were trying to reduce that size of the great room, that's on the first floor as I'm reading the plans. Is that correct? So it really doesn't affect the second story, which is the issue where it's blocking the views. I did ask about this loft area, because if you did not have that, you could push your whole second-story master bedroom in 10 feet. If you remove that loft area, you could keep the same master bedroom, maybe reconfigure the bathroom or the closets or something, but the whole second story would move in towards the street 10 feet. That would be a dramatic reduction in the overall wall, and it would be a reduction in the view blockage of your neighbors. And I'm not sure it would be a huge impact on you not having that one room. But that's, again, your choice. When you talk about the roof decks, we don't have a definition. I think the way I'm trying to go is, if the deck is in the middle of the house and there are, what is it when there's a roof on the sides, about a 3 or 4 foot sloped roof, so you can't, the wall isn't straight up and down, you can't stand right over, lean over the wall and look straight down at your neighbors.
Either a hip or a mansard roof, yeah.
But
either a hip roof or a mansard roof,
something like that. So if you can be up there and it's a 3 or 4 foot railing, but it's in 4 foot from the edge of your building, all you can do is look out. You don't see any of your neighbors because they're down. And if there is no exterior stairwell, which I think they're always so massive because of the need to go up 3 stories, if you don't have that, I think roof decks are certainly a nice addition. We all have a beautiful view. We'd all like to be up there and be able to look out at the ocean and the dunes. So I think it's an issue of how massive does it look, and how, if you have a third story, which I think is a third story roof deck,
is, are you looking out or are you looking down? And the way to remove the looking down is build in the, you have the walls coming up, you come in with a 4-foot slope, and then you have the center of the ceiling, the roof, the deck that doesn't go all the way to the wall. But anyway, I would have liked to have seen some kind of compromise here. There's no objection to the two-story. It's a huge house. We understand you have needs for a huge house. And I think a 50 by 150 lot is a big lot. I know there's, our new standards are 60 foot, but they're not 60 by 150, I'll tell you that, for an R1 lot. I would have liked to have, like I said, seen a compromise where the roof deck was not allowed to be built, so it's straight walls, like a railing that's solid, and you can stand right in the edge and lean over and fall over, but also you can't lean over and look right down. And I would like to see the whole second story just moved back 10 feet by eliminating that loft area. And I don't know if that makes this a whole new project and has to go back to the Planning Commission, and I don't know if that's acceptable, but I should think that would be this huge step towards being the good neighbor that we would like to see happen here. And with that, I'll stop, other than to say that anybody that thinks about this job, this is the worst part of this job, is this view issue, and it comes up quite often, and it's the worst position we could ever be in. And so I wish we could make everybody happy, and it's obviously you can't. So I'm looking for a compromise. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. Steve?
I want to thank everyone for allowing me into their homes and speaking to me over the last couple of days. I really listened to your concerns and suggestions and took them to heart. I also met with Ron Perkins today on his side of his property and asked him specific questions about his blueprints. So I've done my homework as best I can, but like Dave said, this isn't an easy decision. I'm always playing devil's advocate. I'm not a bad person. Talking about the good neighbor policy, I agree. It'd be great to have great neighbor relationships, but I don't want to feel like I'm being threatened when people come forward to this council, when we're already in a tough situation, saying, if you allow this to go forward, you're going to instill or support a bad neighbor relationship in a neighborhood. That's not my job. I'm not a cop and I'm not a lawyer. With that being said, I want to do the best thing for the community as well. And we need to all acknowledge, and I hope we all do acknowledge, that this is a community in transition, and it's something we should be proud of. People are remodeling their homes. People are taking pride of ownership in this community, and it's refreshing. You know, it's great to drive down one of the roads that have been resurfaced, and then you see people are out there remodeling their homes. It's beautiful. It makes you feel good to live here. And with transition comes change, and some of us are okay with change, and some of us aren't so good with change, and we're okay with change when it's not in our neighborhood. I live in the north part of town as well in a single-story home, and I climb the roof a couple times a year, and I don't mean to bore the appellants with this because I shared the story with them, but I dragged my wife up there, and I've always thought about building a second story with a master suite, but every year the eucalyptus trees at the Monarch Grove grow, and my view is diminishing, and it's not someone building a home, it's the darn trees in our community that are blocking views. And again, you know, the staff report was clear that Ron Perkins has met all the conditions required for the project. I mean, there's a trend. If you look at the development, the new development, especially that's going up, there's a trend of reduced landscaping on properties. My notes are kind of a mess. I did have one specific question, if I could just deviate for a second and ask Ron to see if maybe he can answer this question. Ron, on the west elevation of your property, I was just curious if you know the impact from those windows, how they... thank you. Those windows on the first floor versus the block wall that's in place currently with your neighbors, do you have any idea what the window placement will be in relation to that wall height?
It would be out of the view of a person on the first floor, absolutely, without a doubt. If I was inside of the house looking out, you'd see a block wall. those windows.
Okay, so someone standing on the first floor in the great room, for
example. In my house could not look. They would see a block wall.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you for
that. And trees.
Okay, thanks. You know, Don Moore spoke about roof decks and our lack of policy as far as roof decks and the number of roof decks that are in existence in this community and the roof deck that was just recently approved. I mean, obviously we need guidelines. Obviously we need some consistency starting with the Planning Commission level and then this council. But in the meantime, I think we're faced with a case-by-case decision on does a roof deck meet that neighborhood. Don Moore had a beautiful project. His neighborhood, he's and we said it in the meeting, he's the home that's going to cause the transition to occur in that neighborhood. In the existing neighborhood, there's a number of two-story homes. Around the corner, there's roof decks. The roof deck issue is something that I'm okay as far as having more of a focused discussion on, but I would really, really like to have a discussion this evening with Ron Perkins about what we can do to enhance the architectural style of the east and west sides of his home. And maybe, and Kimberly Sutton had mentioned that, if we can come up with a few things to soften the length of that building, and I'm no builder or designer or architect, I mean, I'd like to be able to have that discussion this evening and see if people are open to it. And at this point, I'm going to take a timeout.
Not that Thanks, Steve. Well, I have a few questions for staff. Someone had asked a question regarding the covered portico. Is that included in the lot coverage calculation?
I don't believe the covered portico is in the lot coverage calculation, since it is an open structure, similar to a covered deck, for example.
I see. Okay. Also, someone had mentioned the street tree requirement tonight. If the tree is removed, it's going to require 5 trees. Is that
required? They're required to mitigate for the trees that are lost. They don't need to be all in the front yard. And the 3-to-1 mitigation requirement is a condition of approval. So they wouldn't all necessarily need to be in the front yard, but I think you could, if you had to, you could get 3 in the front yard.
You think you can get 3 in the front yard?
Is that correct?
Okay.
I'm going to ask Susan if that's correct. The mitigation doesn't all need to be in the front yard, does it?
They don't need to all be in the front yard. They don't actually need to be all on the same site. If a site's too small, there's other cases in town where property is not large enough to accommodate them, we can locate them as street trees and other open space areas or other projects.
So would it be appropriate for us, if, let's say, when we got to that point, if this project, if the appeal was denied and the project approved, to specify a certain number of trees, street trees, I should say?
Well, they're not counted. Well, the street trees aren't counted towards the mitigation for the trees removed, but you can use mitigation trees elsewhere.
Okay. And also, I saw that the Planning Commission approved a 17-foot street yard versus 20. Do we have opportunities to move the house even closer to the street, and what would that process be?
The closest you can go to the street with a discretionary approval of that nature is 17. And I think it's a good thing in this case because it helps open up the view just that tiny little bit, that extra 3 feet. So could you go more? You could go more, but you'd have to do a variance.
Okay. Because the reason I ask that question is I know other communities, when you are dealing with a neo-traditional design with the garage in the back, they try and slide the home closer to the street because I think, as my two colleagues up here have said, I think no one has complained. I think the street elevation is very attractive, and I think that will be in scale with the community. And so I was just trying to look for ways to minimize potential impacts. But thank you. Wow. Well, I'd like to disclose that I, too, visited the site with Mr. Perkins, and I visited Ms. Sutton, Mr. Becerra, and Doug. So I've been out, I was out there and I've tried to look at the plans, and I think a lot of what we're seeing is he does meet the standards for lot coverage, setbacks, and building height, and I think design goes a long way. I was surprised to hear Mr. Perkins say that his existing home is already 3,200 square feet, but I think the design in that case kind of minimizes it. As well as it works on his current home, I think it's lacking on this home. And so I do think we need to talk about some improvements and some embellishments. I think the street, the elevation along the street is great. I'm concerned about the west elevation, and I think we can improve the east elevation. I, too, I'm a bit concerned that our planning commission, I would hope that we would be consistent, and I know when Mr. Morris' project came forward, there was a second-story roof deck that was proposed as part of that, and the neighbors raised privacy issues. And even though there is not a policy on the books and the code doesn't speak to it, we do have that discretion. As I started to say earlier, it's no longer, and it isn't enough just to say he complies with all of the standards on the books, and the fact that it's architectural review and that there is discretion involved takes you to another level. Welcome to Grover Beach. So I think that's why we're here. I think the neighbors have expressed some concerns, and it's a tough decision that we need to try and address this. I don't know if I have the issues with as far as the size of the home, because I do think from the street it's going to look smaller, but I do think there's some things that we can do to improve the appearance and maybe show some goodwill. Not that I'm saying a neighbor should design his home, but I do think you're going to have to live in that neighborhood. We do need to look at the impact this is going to have on the community. It is going to set a precedent. And so those are the sort of some of the thoughts that I've been having right now. I've got some other ideas and comments here, but I didn't want to go into that because I wanted to see if you guys might have a direction that you were trying to go in on this.
Well, I'll give it a shot. Someone throw something at me if I'm getting that off base. I would like to be able to have the conversation with Ron Perkins and throw out some of these ideas that it seems we all have. See how, if Ron's open to taking any of these into consideration, maybe giving if we get to that place, giving direction for staff to work with Ron to facilitate the changes. And I'd like to save him the step if we get to this point of going back to planning commission.
Okay.
So that's okay. That's what I'd like to do.
Ron?
I agree.
Well, before he responds, then let me try and summarize where we are and maybe some of the suggestions I have, and then you can address them all in one fell swoop. So it sounds like what I'm hearing as far as the roof deck goes, neither one of you guys don't feel strongly one way or the other. We certainly have to have a policy in place, and there needs to be some discussion on how we go from here. Is that an accurate summation of where you two feel about roof decks?
My personal opinion, as I stated earlier, is that as long as we don't have a policy on the books, this is going to have to be a case-by-case decision. I like Dave's design idea, not that we're designers, but to minimize the potential of someone staring straight down from the roof deck into a neighbor's house to see if there's a way to build it into the facade. I understand what Ron's examples were there with the point of view with our vision. I understand that as well. But I'm open to discussing the existence of the roof deck if we can work it out.
Okay. And also, Dave, you had brought up a point earlier about if the loft area was eliminated, you could possibly reduce the length of this home by about 10 feet. And I must say, I do agree with that in concept, because while the streetscape looks, it would be in scale with everything, you've got an 80-foot-long building that, in essence, is close to an apartment. And so anything that can be done, I think we should discuss. So that's something for you to address as well, Mr. Perkins. Also, I believe some of the architectural elements that we'd be looking for are, you know, a belly band, similar to what your neighbor has around the entire building, outlookers over the garage that might be able to, you can plant vines or something over to kind of soften the edge. Looking at maybe recessing the windows 4 inches if you're trying to create clean lines, if that's not a direction you're going, how about some trim around the window similar to your neighbor to the east? Also, trim on the parapet or over the roof line. David talked about reducing the house length, so definitely we'll go back to that. And then I've got some questions of staff, so those are the ones we maybe if you can address.
I appreciate your concerns and your suggestions. I am very anxious to try to get this project going. It's been a very long process to go through this and very trying on everybody. So I thank you for that opportunity to possibly do some ideas here. I like the idea of I have the front on the front elevation. I had some outlookers in this area that are about 3 foot, and I currently have those on my garage. I would like to propose to you that I add those along the garage side of my house. Mm-hmm. To break that up. I'd like you to note that there is a break at this point of the building. There's a visual break at this point, and there's a visual break again at this point. So even though the picture looks like it's straight, it's actually not very straight along that end. So I'd like to propose that I could be allowed to put outlookers of 3 foot on this side of the garage to help with that architectural appeal. I like the belly band idea. I have not objected to the belly band idea, breaking it up a little bit. I guess my biggest concern, it would be on the inside in that computer room that I'm trying to have the kids do homework. I'm trying to think, how would that work? And really, for our family, that really wouldn't work. So I'm very cooperative to try to do those architectural features on the outside. Great idea on the roof deck. I never thought of that. But, you know, a concern of mine was children, you know. And I would like to propose that I could add a condition that all the way on the inside of the roof deck area that I come in 3 feet from the outside wall with another wall. And that would keep me this distance over the side, and it'd be a safety issue for me. So I think it's a win-win. And I appreciate my neighbor, by the way, standing up, because he did stand up he wants to do a roof deck on his project as well. So I like that idea. Maybe that would be a solution.
Regarding the window treatments.
The window treatment, I was kind of looking for that Santa Barbara old mission, old California look, and that's why I wanted it a little cleaner. I think that might look a little busier. I'm concerned on the busyness on the windows. I could put a foam 2x4 treatment around the outside of that, the both sides of the elevation. I'd like to be allowed to do it all the way around if I'm going to do it. So at least you could give me the condition to do it all the way around, not just on east and west side, because I'd want the house to look uniform then.
If you recess the windows, you still have the clean lines, the 4 inches.
Yeah. I guess I've never done it, so. I would be willing. I think since it's something I know that I can do and I've done before, I'd rather at least have the option of putting the trim on the outside or recessing the windows.
Okay.
I'll leave that option with me if I may.
Talking about some kind of wood trim on the outside?
No, it's stucco. It was stucco.
Stucco over it.
Yeah, they have a foam that you put on and it just goes over. So I would be very acceptable to those conditions if we could add those as part of the conditions and not have to start this whole process over again.
Okay. Thank you. Well, before we get any further, I just want to go on record as saying I think the Planning Commission, through Mr. Moore's project, the council took action and gave direction, and I believe their recommendation to us was trying to follow that. And so at this point, as far as the roof deck goes, I'm inclined to support the Planning Commission on that item. So I just wanted to put that out front so everyone understands where I am on that.
I apologize. I was looking at the plans. You want to support the Planning Commission's denial of the roof?
That's why I am right now, unless I hear a compelling argument.
I thought we were getting so close to a real
approval. Well, I guess the concern I have is if we're starting to talk about a roof deck again, and we're talking about designing elements of it, and I think you had brought this up before, maybe, in my mind, that says send it back to the Planning Commission, because I think the Planning Commission approved it, eliminating the roof deck, and said if you want the roof deck, then it requires a redesign. And I believe that was pretty much, that was in their minutes.
The Planning Commission or the Planning Commission originally approved my roof deck, and their concern was privacy. And I think through this brainstorming process, I could eliminate that possible that privacy issue that my neighbor has with that, you know, by the new design of keeping a parapet wall. It's non-structural. It just eliminates you from going out to that point.
The Planning Commission did condition him to remove the second-story roof deck. So just to clarify, the original
they
staff
did condition it.
Maybe that's what he meant. The original staff recommendation was
for the roof deck.
Was to support the project as designed. That's correct.
May I ask a question of staff? Mayor.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Boy, I'm not going to live this one.
Yeah, I know. I got to remember you're bigger than me. So there's no room in our current codes to move the house forward at all? There's no opportunity for a 15-foot setback?
That opportunity is always there, but not where you are today. You'd have to send them back through an additional process for a variance. In terms of what we're talking about process, too, in terms of process, there'd be some reluctance to recommend on my part that we send them back to the Planning Commission, because then there's always the opportunity to end up back here on appeal. Our suggestion from a staff standpoint would be, as much as we can, give some suggestions for direction. I've heard some good responses and comments so far on design things. A lot of the items I think the applicant is willing to do. It looks like there may be some consensus on the roof deck in terms of actually allowing it. And as the city attorney will attest to, I think we look at this as a de novo hearing. It's new information is presented. You have the opportunity, I believe, to consider the roof deck, adding that back in. But there were also some suggestions by the applicant in terms of moving those in. I think the last thing that might give him some more direction is I'm kind of unclear on the back portion of the second story. It looked like there may be some consensus to reducing or bringing back the second story portion of the house. And I don't know if there's consensus on that or not. If we had some direction or the applicant had some direction on that one item, I think you might be able to wrap it all up with some direction in a motion.
I don't think Ron was in favor of moving that second story in. I'd vote for this whole project if he'd move it in at 10 feet.
Yeah, I guess
if you have a laundry room,
can't
there,
get
you had
more
a laundry
than that,
and dropped it down to the garage for a laundry room or something. Isn't there some way to?
And nobody's, in terms of design, nobody's really talked about it, but the applicant does have a 38-foot rear yard where a 20-foot rear yard is required. There may be some shifting of square footage from the first story to the second story. We have coverage issues that we're pushing to the limit there, but right now he's actually slightly less on coverage than he would be allowed.
Well, that was my point. On the second story, you have a laundry room and a loft area. If you had a laundry chute for everything and it dropped down to the first floor somewhere, you picked up that 10 feet again. I mean, almost.
I think
we're just trying to pull it in so that the second story is less than the first story.
Oh, I see
that
where you're going.
Eliminates the block wall concept of a... It's a huge building. It's... Yeah. And I understand he wants that, and you're awful close to getting it.
I think there's two things that would help in that regard. One would be pulling in the whole second story. The other would be taking a chunk out of that
well,
one
half
corner.
Well, half of it is a deck already. And the second story, the back of it, is a master suite, which is an open
point.
Deck.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's even covered, is it? Yes,
no.
Come on.
No,
help us out here.
It's not covered.
You're part of this.
Could we add a condition that I would cantilever the... I guess I couldn't. I was thinking I could cantilever, still have my computer room for the kids, and cantilever the front to the front, the second story to the front. Can that cantilever, it's not, it would be open space or not like patio space?
No, you'd have to, we would have to measure it to the main building.
To that point, to the 17-foot setback?
Right.
Yeah. So eliminate 10 feet from the, have a setback 10 feet, this elevation 10 feet.
Is that what we're suggesting, is move 10 feet from the second story to the first story?
I think that's what Dave is suggesting. That
was, well, just move the second story in 10 feet, and it's, if you look at it.
Reduce the house size.
Yeah.
By the 10 feet, by the width.
The second story house size, which half of it is already decked, so you're talking, I think, at
5 feet?
10 by 10. I mean, you're talking about 100 square feet.
A 10 by 10.
I'm guessing at that, but if you didn't have the loft area, or if you didn't have the laundry room up in there, and you slide your whole master bedroom around and rearrange it a little bit, you brought it in the full width of the deck there, at least, which is 8.6. You've just reduced the second level, second floor level, and that solid wall, and you've opened up the view substantially to your neighbors.
But I'm just looking for some clarification. You're suggesting that if Ron could space plan and make that happen, he could literally take this 10 feet and move them down to the first floor, right? Is that what you're suggesting?
He has more ground coverage on the bottom. If you want to, that's true.
Well,
I don't know how that works in your plan off of the great room. But
let's see if I can't get us off this cycle. I think what you're saying is let's reduce the second floor by 10 feet, and maybe we can let him do the – reconfigures the interior. We just give the direction that let's move the second floor or reduce the second floor by, 10 feet. That
we're asking if he would agree to something. Yeah, well, I'm hearing you. Yeah.
I guess you're asking. I'm stopping short of just, I think we do have the authority to direct him to do that, and he has a choice to either pursue that design or not build its home. I think we need to be clear in the direction we give to the applicant and to staff.
I don't think we can approve a project with, it would have to go back to the Planning Commission for that kind of adjustment, wouldn't it? Unless it was just determined here what we're going to do.
I think our city attorney would like to earn some of his money this evening.
This is a hearing de novo on the appeal, so you do have the authority to consider the project as a whole. But the more conditions and the more uncertain or non-specific the suggestions and the conditions become, my recommendation would be that they are sent back through the process and evaluated by the Planning Commission and brought back to you if that's how the process goes. And maybe staff can address that to a certain point. In other words, if you're confident and the applicant is agreeable that you can leave today's hearing with some specific conditions that can be put into a resolution of approval that are clear and precise, then that would be a way to proceed. If, however, there's some question as to what exactly is going to happen, what effect is going to have, how it's going to look, those types of issues, then my recommendation would be that if it gets too non-specific, that he has an opportunity to take it back through the process and have staff evaluate it.
So in terms of process, send it back to the Planning Commission, prove it tonight or deny it tonight with specific conditions, or continue it tonight with some direction, and then you'll have an opportunity to look at it. I think as long as we, my thought is that if we do get some direction, it looks like we're getting close to getting direction and can direct him back with some fairly specific things, but not quite figured it all out, that Ron could come back with some designs, share them with the neighbors, staff and have an opportunity to look at them. We provide pretty good public disclosure at that point. Everyone could come back and look at it at the next convenient date for the City Council.
I prefer not to do that. If we could do some changes that we've talked about. Like right now, I'd rather write it out and get it over with. This costs a lot of money to do this. It prolongs the agony. It prolongs everything. And I'd rather have you make some suggestions that you have, and I'm very cooperative to try to work those out right now. And I would be agreement to those right now for your approval.
So what about the last item of discussion, the 10-foot from the second story?
I have no problem at this point right now. I would like to do that and have this project approved.
Okay.
Could we accept a plan that removes 10 feet but isn't detailed and where the bathroom changes or where the interior walls? I mean, it's just all we're talking about is a shell. And he would work about the inside.
Based upon your discretion of evaluating the visual impact that the structure has, yes, you can direct him to reduce the second story in volume by 10 feet of living space.
Of depth.
I assume, and I have not examined the plans in detail, but I assume you mean 10 feet in depth and full width, or the applicant knows exactly what the...
Full width is fine.
Yes, you have the ability to do that, as impose that condition, and that would be specific enough to work.
Well, I think that's that good neighbor stuff I was talking about.
Yeah, I think we're seeing a real effort on the part of Ron Perkins to make this happen, and I understand his concern. I'd like to make a motion. I'll throw it out there. I'd like to make a motion that we deny the appeal with the conditions that have been discussed and set forth tonight, including a belly band around the entire project, outlookers above the garage. The windows will either be trimmed in stucco or recessed. 10 feet will be removed from the second story along the entire width of the structure. And I think I got it all.
Roof deck?
I'm sorry.
The only modification would be that I think that the appeal would be granted and the project would be approved with new conditions.
The appeal would be granted?
Why can't we deny the appeal and approve that we're approving the project with modifications?
Fine.
Fine, just move on.
You can pursue that.
I like this.
Okay, so as previously stated, I'd like to deny the appeal, approve the project with conditions, including the roof deck being back in the project with the, I don't know how to word this, the 3-foot setback from the exterior roof line. Help me.
Setback 3 feet from the exterior wall.
Exterior wall, thank you. And to facilitate those changes and work with staff. And I don't think it would hurt to work with the neighbors and at least show them the changes. But I think you've gone above and beyond. I'm done. I'm not. That's not part of my motion, but it just wouldn't hurt. I think you've made a real effort tonight to, I think, make some things that should appease the neighbors as best as you can. And that's my motion.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, so your motion includes the roof deck and redesign of that?
Yes.
Okay, so there is a motion to approve, to deny the appeal and approve the project with the modifications as stated. Roll call vote.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
I'd also like to maybe take a moment to provide staff with some direction. I think it's appropriate. I think we are constantly going to be fighting this battle. I have some suggestions. I think this building is straight up. The elevation on the west side, there is an impact. What a lot of communities do is once you get above the first floor, they start to step these structures back. And so we also have been talking about lot coverage, which is forcing homes to go up when maybe we should relax the standard somewhat in the R1 zone. So I would ask that at some point that staff, well, maybe I can get the council's input on this, that I'd like to see some ordinance amendments. I know we've talked about a viewshed study, but that's going to take a long time. I know Ms. Zelschuk of the Community Development Department is working on the housing element, which is certainly the highest priority. So I don't want to be stuck in this quagmire anymore, and I think we need to look at a few things. come back and let's talk about, in the R1 zone, lot coverage being 40 or 45%, the second floor of the upper floor being 50% of the lower floor. I would also like there to be some discussion to bring back increased setbacks based on size and orientation. So if we're building that is boxy, that is 5 feet, if it's going to be 25 or 24 feet, it should be set back, let's say, 10 feet or something to that effect. I think while I don't want to dictate how you design the interior of your home, we do need to define the envelope a lot better. Also, I think we need to have some clarification of lot coverage. I mean, I know this portico does not have structures going to the ground, but it cantilevers out quite a ways, and I feel it should be counted in the lot coverage calculation. And then finally, let's talk about roof decks requirements.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the communities, when items come up, they make a note, and at some point in the year, they bring those amendments back, and we're not waiting for 2 years or a year. Let's get in and let's start discussing these items, and let's get some resolution, because no one feels good about what has happened up here with Mr. Moore's project or this project this evening. And I think by dealing with some of these, we can address a lot of that. And I know that when we were talking with Ms. Sutton, I expressed that he is complying. There is a vision that we may have. It doesn't help in this case, but we can try and define these a lot better so that we can give our planning commission some tools. So I would hope that maybe I can get some support from the council members that we head in that direction.
I appreciate you sharing your experience with us, John, and I too agree. I mean, looking at the setbacks as the requirements stand today, I like the idea of stepping the second story back based on overall height of the structure. And those are things that we can borrow from other cities today. We don't need to rewrite the ordinances and regulations. And I think it's something that's important because I agree. I do not enjoy being up here on these projects where I'm trying to help someone redesign their home. And I'm not an architect, so.
We're not talking about a comprehensive update of the codes. We're talking about some amendments and some adjustments in the R1. We can update the zoning without going through a general plan amendment. So I know that's more word. I'm sorry, Susan. But I think we need to start tackling this, and this has been deferred far too long. The standard that says needless and unnecessary blockage of views, what the heck does that mean? What's a necessary view? What's needless and what's substantial? You know, we just need to get some quantifiable objectives so when people come to this community and they want to build a project that they could somewhat rely on what we have in the books is what we're going to be going by. And so I think we really need to start tackling that and not deferring it any longer. Yes, sir.
Can I just throw out one thing? I just want to make sure that staff's clear with the resolution and the direction is that Ron's going to work with staff on the redesign. It's not going back to planning. Are we all on the same page on that? Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
I had a comment about your view idea. You're never going to be able to put that into concrete description.
Well, I
mean,
agree.
It's an arbitrary.
Well, I agree, because if you redesign a project, you may block someone else's view, and that's sort of what I was going when I was in that soapbox about what's a necessary view.
Right, right.
But I think we do need to give our planning commission the best tools possible so that they can hopefully make an informed decision on these items.
Good point.
Okay. Thank you, John. You could send back the mayor and Mayor Pro Tem.
Yeah, please.
Send the mayor? Does that gavel fit really well?
If it's so good, maybe I'll let you just keep going. Okay, in that case, so let's wait for 5-7 minutes.
You guys want a break?
I could use it.
Okay, go ahead. Let's do it. Okay, we're going to break until 8:50. How's that?
Sounds
gives you 11
good.
Minutes.
Okay.
I can get caught up in my family.
Very good.
Okay, we're back. Item number 11 has been, what's the term for that? It's been pulled off, but it's the appeal has been...
The appeal was withdrawn by the...
Withdrawn, that's it. I knew it was something real technical like that. Thank you. Okay, so we're on item number 12, citizens option for public safety grants for the year of 2004. The COPS grants, and our police chief isn't here, so...
Just take public comment.
Mr. Mayor, the item is set for public hearing that we are continuing to the next council meeting on September 2nd.
Okay, so we're going to continue that to September 2nd. Roger. Okay.
Could I ask just a question? What, it's set for a public hearing for the public to come and tell us what they would like us to spend this COPS grant for? Is that the purpose of a public hearing?
For the police chief to identify what the department would recommend and for council to consider that in public and for any member of the public to come forward and express an opinion on that.
Right, but it's agendized here, but there isn't any report, so it's...
Oh.
Why didn't we just pull this or something?
I believe the grant required a public hearing. It was advertised as a public hearing. Nothing precludes the council from taking any public testimony on this item.
But I thought the public hearing was to discuss the police chief's suggestions for... I haven't seen any suggestions. That's my point.
Right, and I kind of assume what you're saying, yes.
That's why the item is being continued to next meeting. And this way we have advised all the members of the public that the item is continued and basically it stays open until the next public hearing.
Is there a way to make this a little clearer on what expenditures could be used for? I mean, it can't be salaries. It has to be, I mean, something. So if the public is going to spend 2 weeks thinking about what we could spend the money on, they should know some of the restrictions. Or how can we get that word out?
Well, the public would be invited, and they would have an opportunity when the chief's report is prepared and made public. Basically, the kind of things that have been used in the past are additional staffing above the existing complement of staffing. That can only occur when all of your positions are filled. You can use it to pay for overtime. You can use it for equipment, vehicles, things like that, computers.
See, I agreed with you. I think that maybe the chief should have done a two-minute overview of what the COPS grant is and kind of prepped it a little bit, yeah. So, but I guess Ron's kind of prepped it, so I'll leave it at that since the chief isn't in the audience.
Thank you.
Regular business, proposed compensation plan for volunteer firefighters. Chief Criswell.
Yes, Mayor. Members of the City Council, Jack Criswell, Fire Chief. As you remember, last council meeting, I was before you regarding the firefighter compensation plan, the drills, and for the calls. At the same time, you requested some additional information, and we got that together for you. Number one, you wanted the Grover Beach and Oceano Volunteer Firefighter Compensation Plan comparison outline. We have that in your packet. Also, the San Luis Obispo County paid per call firefighter compensation comparisons. That's also in your packet. Grover Beach Fire Department participation report for the second quarter of 2003. And you have that before you also. Are there any questions that I can help you with regarding any of this?
I have a question of this the participation report. It says emergency response, and it gives percentages. What is that a percentage of? 22, the first staff officer, number one, 75% of the training attendance. I understand that. 22% of the emergency response. Is that 22% of all of the calls that are made?
Of all of the calls for that three-month period. That's correct.
22% he's made. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else have any questions?
I just want to say I met with Chief Criswell and Lynn and Martin and Ron last week at some point. Lost track of time, and they were looking for both David and I to be there, with, being that we're on the Oversight Committee, and David was out of town. So we went through and we talked about this and talked about some other issues that I'd like to go into some more detail once we get through the paid call structure.
What do you mean once we get through the paid call structure? What do you mean?
Okay, or I'll bring it up now. Well, let me just tell you where I'm at on this, I guess, since we're having discussion. I'm not opposed to the structure. If you really look at it, the fire department's actually raised the bar on themselves. They're now requiring 75% drill attendance on a monthly basis versus a quarterly basis in order to be compensated. And as we were discussing it in the chief's office, There is time at the end of the month for Lynn or the chief to actually quantify and make sure that that person did or did not make their 75% before the cutoff date, because there's an opportunity for a makeup drill, for example. So it seems as though the system's pretty straightforward to manage. I can say that because I don't have to manage it. But it seems as though that the confusion that I personally had in the last one, where we were looking at quarterly training requirements versus biweekly pay, it seems as though those kinks have been worked out of the plan, and it's easy to track. As I mentioned in the last meeting, we're looking at a paid call incentive as another alternative to try to increase turnout at these calls. The downside is I think we're looking at what's called a paid call fire department. We're no longer a volunteer organization. It seems as that that's not a viable solution. Corner of the first part of that page is if you look at the current Oceano plan, their attendance structure, there's none. So that raised a big flag of caution to me in that we're expecting the folks from Grover Beach to be going to 75% of their drills to stay trained and to provide that minimum level of service to our community. Yet with the provisional staffing solution that we've all been in support of, we have no way to mandate that with the Oceano crews once they come into Grover Beach. And I thought, or my concern was, we need to provide a minimum level of service to our community. We can definitely hold these folks accountable to that, but we may have an issue here with Oceano responding into our community. And that's the discussion that we either have tonight or another evening, but it looks like we need to get some clarity on that.
Steve, when you talked with them, is that one of the things that maybe they could bring up between the chiefs or however it goes,
I guess,
to reach that level?
I guess we had discussions, and Ron and Martin, our chief, jump in here at any time. It seems that we've got an oversight meeting next week.
Yep.
Towards the end of the month, we have an oversight meeting. We're going to raise it at that point. There was also discussion of Martin at some point just asking in written form a letter from their chief saying we follow the minimum standards as established by San Luis Obispo County.
Because I think the citizens of Oceano want the same kind of service that the citizens of Grover are getting if this is the way we're going.
Right. And so it's something that we'll need to breach, and we'll see how it goes, but that's something that it just seemed like a gaping hole in the provisional staffing solution is we're holding one group accountable and not the other. Or we have expectations, but we have no way of mandating that they do that. So I just want to share that with you.
I think that we should be insisting on something like that, and when we can do it right through joint training. We have our own training sessions that are offered with certified staff. Oceano folks should be encouraged or more to be here participating. If they're not getting it on their own over there, it should be somehow mandated. They either provide their own or come over to us if they're going to be responding in our city. I think that should be the direction that we're arguing for.
Hey, and I guess that's something to raise at the Oversight Committee, because I could see this based on other issues that we've recently seen with Oceano and the rest of South County could turn pretty political. So, well, let's raise it at Oversight and see where we go.
But within our own city, I'm understanding that we are rolling our own firefighters at all calls also. Now, if that is true, then Oceano is responding to our calls, and we are also. And so then we have trained people there.
Only if they're able to respond. You know what I mean? Well, I mean, there's going to be that situation where it's Oceano's day or week to cover days or two-week period, and there's no Grover resources available in town, and maybe Chief's out of town at a meeting. That's our level of service to the community. We need to make sure it's adequate and appropriate.
Well, we've been told that we're rolling our fellas on all calls in Grover.
They're being toned out. I don't want to get into to argue the semantics. Well, they're being toned out. Whether they're able to respond or not, it's a whole other story.
Well, Aber or Will?
I'm the council member that Lance had talked about, had mentioned long-term solutions. First, let me say, Lance, I haven't been up here as long as everyone else. I have concerns when you choose to come up in public comment period rather than speaking on this item when it comes forward to us. I try to be a straight shooter, and I hope that you respect this council because we're trying to do what's best for this community. Now, I think at the last meeting we said, and I know I said, that I probably don't have a problem going to this pay-per-call performance-based program. But we ask for basic information. And I'm not going to make a decision up here unless I have that information, and that's where we were going. However, the other thing that came up, and what I was trying to point out, is I'm seeing these Band-Aid approaches. It indicates to me, or my intuition says, there are other problems out there. And voila, here we have, Oceano has none when it comes to attendance standards. Now, was that a good deal for us to go into disagreement with Oceano, knowing that we may have people responding into Grover Beach that don't meet the county's minimum standards? That's an issue for me. Are there other solutions out there that we need to start talking about? Because we can't keep repeating this. And I don't know, if we can't hold Oceano to those standards, why aren't we looking at a joint agreement with Royal Grandy or someone else? Let's talk in earnest. Stop playing show and tell with me. I'm a straightforward guy. Give me the information and let me make the best decision I can. So that's my soapbox. I'm going to get down and I'm going to sit back. Thank you. Dee, did you have anything?
I wanted to. There's a couple questions I had of the chief. Now, one of the things that David asked for, and we finally, he said he's asked for it several times, and I'm not really sure how that's worked out. But anyway, we do have an attachment here, attachment 3. Now, the staff-level officers, are those our captains, or what is a staff-level officer? It says staff officer. We have 6 of those.
Right, they're the captains and the division chiefs.
Okay, so other than those people, we only have 6 people that have responded on a regular basis according to this attachment 3 in the last 2 months or 3 months. We have 6 people that have made basically what we were trying to do before, 25% of the call and 75% of training attendance. So that we actually have 6 firefighters other than those other 6 people. And so we have a total of about 12 people out of 31 that are basically doing the whole job of everyone. And this is kind of what you're trying to stop, is trying to get more people involved. And this does really help. This information does give us a pretty good idea of what's happening. And so am I kind of characterizing that right? Am I helping out a little bit?
I believe this does point out exactly what we're trying to say. Mm-hmm. We do have people with 14, 10, 3, 7%. And I believe, I'm hoping that if they know that they're going to get paid, if they get up and come down, that they will. I mean, the ones that know they're not going to get their stipend for that quarter have no incentive for getting up and coming down to the station.
You toned out again for more firefighters, and that was disheartening to me, that a structure fire didn't bring out a fistful of firefighters. And so, there is a problem, and what the problem is, I'm not sure that we're, you know, we just have to keep going until we solve it. And maybe John's right. Maybe it has to do, maybe we have to get together with 3 agencies. I don't know. Maybe, But, you know, it's we need to talk about all these things. We need to get them on the table.
Right. And this is what all the other cities have gone through, and that's why you see them all moving toward a big department. I don't mean fully paid. I mean combination mm-hmm. type departments. Mm-hmm. That's just the nature of the beast, and that's what everything is going to. This was a working with Oceano is a good idea, was a good idea, but we can't hold them to our standards. I mean, you can, but if they decide they don't want to, then they take their ball and go home. There's nothing we can do about it. So,
but at that point, do we say we're not comfortable with the training that you have, and maybe it's time to talk to another agency, CDF or whatever, or Rio Grande that has better training standards? I don't know. Maybe that's where we need to go too, or maybe we need to start that communication at the same time. If Oceano won't, because I think Steve brought up a real good point when he said that it is really imperative that someone responds in our city, whether they respond from Aurora Grande or Grover Beach or Oceano, that they have a certain amount of training each and every month so that they're at least certified, so to speak. And I don't know how that really works. Steve is probably more up on it than I am, but if he had that concern, then I think it's a valid concern that something goes south on a call and you look at the guy and he's only got 25% of training over, you know, a 4-month period of time. That could be some type of, in my mind, and that's what Steve had brought up before, some type of an issue with concerns of litigation or liability. And I think that's where Steve was pushing all that. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Dee. Go ahead.
But don't you think that we're bringing our standards to the next level and or a Grandy has theirs, don't you think that that's almost forcing Oceano to bring their standards up because everybody else is getting here and they're still here, so that'll say, come on, guys, you need to get up with the rest of us, whether that goes with CDF or whoever they go work with or mm-hmm. however that is. And I think that'll be part of in talking in the whole group, that Oceano, I'm sure, mm-hmm. will come to the next level.
Well, we'd hope so, and I guess that's what, you know, that group that you guys are, you know, your oversight committee would deal with, but it's still something I think we need to at least address here.
If I could chime in again, it's, you know, Dee raised a really great point, and I think when we were in our meeting last week, there was an expectation with provisional staffing that same thing would happen. We're televised, right? There's indications that maybe that's not happening. And that's what we need to follow up through the oversight committee. And again, you know, you can say, you know, Dee, I want you to paint my house red, and I need this color trim. And you could say, I don't want to.
Cows on the side.
Yeah, and windmills. but you could just say, no, I don't want to do that. And they say, well, okay, and I go home. So we're kind of stuck in a rock and a hard place type of situation. At some point soon, depending on how this goes, and I have a gut feeling how it may go, is we need to
where we're at in this process. But let's. I like this agreement with Oceano, and I think it's been very positive. And if we can work together and are training together, then the personalities mix more, and we become even a better trained department serving both of our cities.
And I understand completely, and I support you on that. It's just a matter of timing. There was an expectation when Grover and Oceano started the provisional staffing that balance was going to come to play. So we need to figure out, can we do it and when? Because we can't continue to wait. And I think Grover Fire, you know, Chief Criswell has told me, has really extended a hand to do multi-agency training and invite them over. So I think it's been going on. Yeah. So anyway.
Well, and as you said, when we started the provisional manning, we thought that was going to be a pretty good way to solve some of our staffing problems. And it's not. And Chief is bringing back another way to potentially solve staffing problems. And if that doesn't happen, we're going to have to look at something else. That's all we're saying. I think mm-hmm. that's all everybody's saying here is that if this doesn't work, we need to go back to the drawing board. And as Lance said a little while ago, we can't look at the long range all the time. And this is a short range thing. And if the short range doesn't work, we need to keep working on the short range. You know, and I think we got to keep moving along. I think that This works for me, too. I hope that it'll basically put more people at calls when we have calls.
You know, I hope it does, Mayor. Too. And I think that, you know, maybe a couple months down the road, we'll think of something else that might work, or somebody will bring up another idea. I'll have to bring it back to you because it requires a resolution. It doesn't mean we're in dire straits and the sky's falling, but that's just how we have to do it. We just have to keep tweaking it until we hit on something that's going to work a little better.
Mayor, I'd like to talk a bit. We talked about provisional staffing somewhat at the meeting at the Trouville Center. Mm-hmm. We asked the other departments the differences. Is one better? There was problems with paid call, provisional staffing, and volunteers. I mean, paid call wasn't the end-all solution either because I purposely asked that question at that meeting. So that has problems too. But in along with that, I think we have a problem in our own department, and it was an example right tonight. We have a fireman bringing up this is a big issue for our department, and before the fire chief can come in and make a staff report and talk about the issue, he wants to get his 2 cents in. So I'm wondering who's running that department right now. And on top of that, I'm looking at this list, participation report. You've got firefighters attending 25% of the calls, 1% of the emergency responses in a 3-month period. That's 3 training sessions out of 12, if there's one a week. I'm saying, what are they doing there? Tell them to hit the road. I think we should have vacant spots and try and find people that are willing and trained and able and can serve the times we need somebody. I think we should have vacancies rather than having somebody making 1% of the calls in 3 out of 12 of the training sessions. Why are they there?
Well, that's what I said when I brought up these statistics,
Dave. We need some strong. Well, this is the report I've been asking for 3 or 4 months, and I knew it was going to show what they think we should be doing. Somebody's in the wrong position. Somebody's wearing the wrong hat or something. So along with discussions about Oceano's level of training, I think we need to be looking at our own department and how well we are led. So I think there's a lot of issues, I'm looking for strong direction from our fire chief to tell me what's the best way to go. I don't know. I'm not the fireman. I'm trying to look over the budget for the fire department. This one is even showing that, well, in a lot of situations, the firemen will be receiving less stipends. I don't know why that would help instill more responses. I'm missing something. You see, on one hand, you say, well, if we give them more dollars, we pay them for each call, maybe they'll show up. And then the next time I hear it, well, we have family problems, we have jobs, and we're out of town, and we blah, blah, blah. I hear a lot of whining over there lately. And so I'm just thinking back to different times and different departments, and it was a lot different.
Well, don't sugarcoat it, Dave. Give it to us straight.
Well, I'm kind of sick of it. I have to tell you.
And that's what I was kind of referring to when I said that, you know, the 10 or 11 people that are making all the calls, they're going to just make more money because now they're going to make more, you know, they're going to get their...
That's fine.
And it's fine for me, too. But I don't see that it's going to really reflect on the other people that aren't making the calls. It's not going to make them make the calls. Right. I'm saying exactly what you're saying.
Okay.
I think we're reverberating the same thing in different ways. The 20 people that aren't making calls because you start paying $9 an hour from them show up. They haven't showed up, they're probably still not going to show up. Yeah. But those guys that have been showing up are going to show up more. They're going to make a little bit more. And that's okay, too.
But then I'm saying send some of the others on their way.
I agree. Okay. I agree. That's what I said last time at the last meeting when I said when you sign up for something like this and you agreed it 25% of the time you're going to be on calls and 75% of the time you're going to be at training sessions, and you sign up to do that as a volunteer and you don't do it, then maybe it's time to look at your obligation.
Well, I don't hear that coming. I hear us trying to figure out some other way to appease them so that, they'll maybe keep on the roster or something.
So is that your direction then? You would like me to clear out the firefighters that can't make 25% of the calls and 75% of the drills? Is that what we're...
I think preferably we'd like to see you rally them. I don't know if you can do that, but I think that would be preferably what we'd like to do. And if you can't rally them, find somebody that will do it. I think that's what Dave's saying. Mm-hmm. That's what I hear. If they don't want to do the job, then maybe there's somebody else there that will fill their spot. So keep hearing how professional they are and how professional they want to be, and they want to be in this job classification, then why aren't they doing it? And it can't be all dollars. Dee, you had something to say? I'm sorry.
I'm just sitting here really taken back. I don't think there's any one of us sitting up here that makes $9 an hour. None of us. So can, you know, you hold a full-time job and you're doing this because it's something that's the extra money to maybe put our kid through school or do something else, the extra money, or maybe we can afford to do this. And maybe that's what they're doing. If by working and helping the fire department, and I look at it not just the fire department, but the community, they're doing this as a community thing also. We can go home, go to sleep at night, and we're fine. These people have to, they're on call. I guess I look at it when I work at the funeral home, it's 24/7. When they call, I have to go. It's not at my convenience or whatever.
But you signed up for that.
Yeah, I signed up for that.
Just like they did.
Yeah.
I think that's what we're saying.
And it's a job.
I know. I think that's what we're saying, though. They signed up for it.
But I feel like they are looking at it as another job. And I think by giving up this incentive
job, yeah,
that they will make it. And they do what they can when they can.
And that's it. When they apply for a volunteer slot, they're not required to make 75% of the drills and 25% of the calls. That's a goal if they want to receive a stipend. Nobody signs on for that. I think this room would be empty right now if that's was what we expected when they came on. We take what we can get that any one of them can give us. And if it's 5%, 14%, 3%, we'll take it. I mean, that's what we need. ISO, the Insurance Services Office, which rates the city, we have a better rating than Rio Grande has. I don't know what Pismo has, but they count, the Insurance Services Office counts 5 volunteers equals 1 paid person because they figure that it's going to take 5 in order just to get 1 to show up for a call. That's just the nature of it. So if we have 25 volunteers, that's 5 people showing up for a call. That's kind of the average, and that's what we get when we're talking about fires. Not medical calls, but fires. And our call volume, our personnel did drop off when we went to provisional staffing because people were getting up in the middle of the night and on Sundays and away from dinner in order to come down to make sure that that first rig was staffed and could get out to the call. Don't have to anymore because it is going, and it is going with at least 2 people. So they're not coming down. I mean, that's understandable, and that's not a problem, you know, that portion of it. We want them. We'd like to have them come down for a backup, but we took care of our major problem. And all we're doing here is changing money around. We're not asking for any more money. We're just moving money around. Rio Grande, they have the money. They're paying their people. They're hiring engineers. They're hiring captains. They're just hiring away because they know that's what they have to do. Pismo Beach went with CDF because they know that's what they have to do. You want to know who's leading this department? I believe it's you. It's not me. I'd like to have a paid department have some accountability, but I don't. You know, I have $400,000 to run the fire life safety department, and what does the police department have? $2.6 million or some obscene amount, and yet you're holding me accountable and who's running the fire department. You know, I don't think that's right. I think I'm doing pretty good with a little bit of bubble gum and paste you're giving me to make this thing run. I have 30 people out there, 25 to 30 people that I'm responsible for, plus ambulance to go back with a paramedic and do compressions on this guy because they're here trying to cover both cities. So Lance has to throw his keys to the pickup over to one of the other firefighters and say, park the pickup, I'm going in on the ambulance, and I'll be back whenever I can, doing it by himself. You know, I mean, maybe he doesn't make 25% of the calls, but the ones he makes, he damn sure does a good job. And so does everyone else.
Can I jump in here?
Sure, go ahead.
I didn't indicate that Lance couldn't speak. I indicated
the timing in which he spoke. I think now is the appropriate time to speak. That was the issue that I had with that. Also, I appreciate the information you just gave me. I mean, that's something that I wasn't aware of. When you say it's 1 in 5, you recruit 25 and you get 5 people to respond. That's critical information that until 30 seconds ago I didn't have. And you can sort of see, excuse me, you can sort of see my point on the information.
Don't pick on me.
So the other question I have for you is, as we've gone through provisional staffing and now we're talking about pay per call, is this a trend that has happened in other communities? Can you speak to that?
Yeah, it's a trend that's going through with all the communities. I believe someone on the council asked, maybe we're just dinosaurs here trying to make this thing work with all volunteers. And the answer is yes, you are. All the other cities are going to this. I mean, we have the cities all around us here that are going to it. And sure, money's an issue, but if you're going to run a fire department, life safety department, you're going to have to pay for it.
And I think that's what I was referring to about discussing these options in earnest so we can figure out what's the best fit and how do we implement that.
I think we have to give credit where credit is due, because when Lance came up, our mayor had the option of either letting him speak then or when the item was agendized, and the mayor said, it's America, you can go ahead and speak now.
I agree, but, you know, if we do that for everyone, then we have no order. There's a purpose for public comment, and he read it specifically, and I understand the mayor allowed him to, but do we allow people to start circumventing our processes? And that's obviously the issue I have, because I think he's got adequate time now to address us and say all the things he said before. And so that's just my personal preference, I guess. That's just my personal opinion. Yeah. So
now, see, I would have done it at the agendized item, but...
Jeez.
And everybody's going to get a chance to sit here, both of you guys. So
yeah.
You'll get your turn in the barrel also.
Yeah.
That was another. That brings up a point, John. You had mentioned that the chief said one of the things that you just kind of said that I had assumed, and maybe I'm assuming it wrong because we didn't have the information, was that everybody was required to do 25% of responses on incidences and 75% of training, and now you're saying that it's really not required. And I assumed this all the time that was basically. When you signed up, that's what you agreed to do.
That was to receive a stipend.
Right, right. So if they don't want to receive a stipend, the other option is that hopefully we'll get them to respond once in a while and get money other ways.
Or because if I'm busting my rear end and doing, let me pick on someone, 83% of the trainings and 30% of the calls, and then I see a firefighter doing 2% of the calls, I'm going to have some animosity saying, you're not carrying your weight in this department, and let's step it up. You know, we're in this together. And I would think at some point there's got to be some baseline where you say, you know, we're looking for some commitment, and if you can't make it, you know, go do something else to serve your community. But we're serious. And I just wanted to throw that out there. I agree. I mean, a strong team is a team with expectations. But with that being said, I'd like to go ahead at this point and find the resolution.
Actually, let's open this up. I was going to open it to public communication.
Okay.
I'm sure that there are some people from the fire department or from the public that would like to speak, because we've hammered it to death, and it's their turn. Lance, you've already spoken. We're not going to let you speak.
All right. It's not American.
Okay. You're only allowed to speak on agendized items out of order.
Okay. Well, first of all, when I came up here this evening, something that Mr. Lieberman said earlier today, these meetings are televised.
Mm-hmm.
And I did watch the televised agenda from last meeting where you discussed this. And each of the points that I brought up in my address was from comments that council members made at the last meeting. So, you know, you are up here, you are in the public eye when you make a comment about two firefighters and two ambulance personnel being enough to handle a medical aid call, you should be held accountable for that comment. And that's what this was about this evening. You know, I have a very good paying job. I am also a divorced father and I have two children. And when I stand call 2 days out of the weekend, those children don't leave the house for 2 days out of the weekend. And if I tick you off, I'm okay with that. Because you know what? I'm ready to give up my badge at any time. I'm ready to retire. I'm at my wit's end. If all I had to do was do my on-call days, had adequate staffing, didn't have to deal with budgetary issues, didn't have to deal with council issues, I'd be a much happier person. I don't enjoy getting up here in a confrontational manner, and I don't hide anything, but nobody ever asks me any questions. You know, nobody comes to a member of the department like myself and says, you know, how are things working for you? There's not that interplay. We're going back to the Oceano Community Services District, and we're going to talk to them about the minimum staff requirements, the minimum training requirements they have to meet. You know, I'm a straight shooter. We only had 9 out of 22 firefighters that made 75% of the drill last quarter. If we're going to hold them accountable, we need to hold ourselves accountable. You know, and we're trying to find ways to do that. That's what this whole thing is about, is we're trying to find ways to do it. We're trying to do the best job we can. But we sit there and we see the council meetings, and maybe it's a comment that's not made with the full understanding of what impact it's going to mean to the fire department, but we see these things on the televised meetings, and we hear comments like yours about how many firefighters are enough, and it does seem like council members are running the fire department. And we hear about you guys are making decisions. We're equal basis on who's ticking who off. Okay.
So. Hey, Lance, before you go. I always have to stop Lance before he walks away.
Well, it's usually a bad idea, though.
I get two shots at him?
The stoplight is flashing at me. That means go back to you.
Mine never ends.
Stop.
The last meeting, and I hope I explained this well to Chief Criswell and Lynn when we had our follow-up meeting. We recently went to a conference at this place Fallen Leaf Lake, and it was about improving communications with the council and the manager. Part of that was there was a personality profile that each of us did. And there's 3 people on this council, and as I told Chief, I'll say I'm one of them, and you can figure out who the other two are, that their personality types, they need adequate information to feel like they're making the best decision they can. And the last meeting wasn't, in my impression, we're against your restructuring of paid call incentive. It's we don't have enough information to make a decision. So it wasn't a slam on the fire department. It wasn't, this is our fire department, not your fire department. There's 3 people up here that I bet you would fall into the same personality profile. Give me information, and I'll make the best decision I can, and I'll go home, and I'll feel good about it. I just want you to sit, basically, in case you hadn't heard, I think that was the group dynamic that took place here. It wasn't a power play. It was, a lot of the information came late last minute, couldn't analyze it. You got 3 people that can't vote on it. So just know that, and I was on that side of the fence for a long time, and I always felt like, you know, I have pride of ownership. This is my fire department. I'm a part of this fire department, and the dynamic's a little different from this side of the fence. I mean, we've got to fund the fire department. We've got to fund every other department, and, I mean, the priorities up until the last 2 years weren't to give the fire department anything more than they had the year before, and I think we're looking at provisional staffing. I mean, the transgression, and you don't need to be standing here for this, but I mean, if you look at Pismo Beach, we're going down the same path that Pismo Beach went down. Volunteer to paid call. Then they staffed a couple people, supplement with paid call that didn't work so well, and they went full-time contract. I mean, this isn't abnormal what we're going through. It's growing pains. And I just want you to know, explain what happened last time as best I could and let you know that we understand and we're doing the best we can, but we have other issues as well as far as like funding and priorities and stuff like that.
If I could just jump in there real quick, and I think what Steve was talking about with the information, that gets to the question of accountability. You know, we do take accountability very serious because we are accountable to the citizens of this community. And so from my perspective, I need to have that information to feel like I'm making the best decision that's going to affect the community. So I think that does address the issue of accountability. So anyway.
That's 2 out of 3. Now, who's the third one?
Right, I understand, and I think I should probably leave before I get myself in any further trouble. I understand what you're all saying, that you're accountable to the citizens of Grover Beach. I'm accountable to the citizens of Grover Beach every day.
Uh-huh.
The toner goes off, and I didn't get up for the structure fire on Saturday, Friday night, because I knew I had call all day Saturday, and I was at home alone with my children, so if I leave the house, I leave my children alone. I heard the second tone out, and I didn't go. I heard the third tone out, and I didn't go. And did I feel like crap about it Saturday morning? Yes, I did. And that's something that I have to live with. And, you know, I was alone, the only member of our department. The one thing that staff-level officers do for you guys is we respond. When Oceano responds to a call in our jurisdiction, a staff-level officer responds to every call. And what are we there for? We're qualified. For instance, I was not there as QC. I was there as a patient provider, and I got taken out of that role. But we're there all the time. We're trying to do the best we can for the citizens of River Beach. I think we're all on the same page there. It's just communicating our individual needs to each other that it seems that we're poor at. And, you know, there, like I say, the last council meeting, there were several hurtful remarks made by council members, maybe insensitive remarks made by council members that really got the ire up of the volunteer firefighters. And, you know, I tried to address them here. I tried to address them in a professional manner. But, you know, when you are televised and the firefighters do get to look at that secondhand, you know, we don't know the thought process behind your comment. We just see what your comment is. And we're reactionary because we do have a lot of pride. And we do think we're doing the best job we can with what we're given, with the budget that we're given, with the equipment that we're given. I think we do a great job. And, you know, that's why I'm up here, is because these guys deserve to have that understood, that we are a good fire department. We are providing good service. We're providing it 365 days a year. You know, Christmas, one of us is going to be on call. Thanksgiving, one of us is going to be on call.
Just
but this time,
No. Just the last thing I can implore to you, because I remember sitting there and hearing about council meetings when I was in the fire department and saying, who do these people think they are making these decisions about the fire department? I came here and told the council, who do you think you are making decisions for the fire department? Now that I'm old and bald and fat and I'm sitting here.
What's that mean? Is that good?
I don't know.
Must be good.
Oh, it's good. But
we knew that
a lot of the issues. So if people watched Channel 20 last week and saw council members saying, I'm not going to deal with this, and where's the information to make a decision, understand and try to understand based on what I told you that that's something that we need to do our jobs. And we're going to do the best we can. I mean, I never would have asked to see the specs on the new fire engine, but the mayor asked for them, so I got it. And it looks like we're supporting you guys getting a primo fire engine. And, yeah, you deserve it. You have to live with it for a long time. So I think we're doing the best we can, and we're not singling you out and trying to be hurtful. But, I mean, we have certain expectations as a council member as well, and just try to keep that somewhere shelved when we sound like we're cranky.
Yeah, and ask the community development department. We do the same thing to them, ask for more information. So we're not picking on you.
Yeah. So.
Okay. I'd like some more information while we're talking about it. Chief, when we have, I've always been told that we maybe won't get too many people responding to ambulance calls in the middle of the night, but when there's a structure fire, everybody rolls. So now I've heard you toned out people four times?
Three
times? Do you think that a $9 per call would have changed that at all?
I have no idea.
It's kind of hard to tell until you try it, basically. Yeah. Actually, I think some of the fire policemen were pulling hose from what I saw. It seemed like. But, you know, going back to what Lance said, too, with this attachment that we have, I think the 11 people that were stipended are probably sitting out there, and you guys are taking the hit for the other guys that someone said something about, well, these guys need to muster up or something like that. Anyway, this, if you guys want to talk, if anybody wants to talk, there's more public, this is open to the public more. Anybody else want to say something?
Oh man, I was going to move forward. There's Randy.
I just wanted to say that I've been a firefighter for 16 years now, and I know a lot of the guys here are doing this to get on as a full-time job. And like Lance, who said he has a well-paying job and he doesn't need this, I could lay my badge down right here and give it to Chief Criswell and walk away, and I'd be okay with that because I'm a full-time firefighter already. So that's got to tell you one thing. I love the fire department. I love it so much I do it 10 days of work full-time, and then I come here on my days off and do it again. And I pull six on-call shifts a month, as the on-call staff level officer. And I was kind of upset with Mr. Ekbom when he said, all I hear is a bunch of whining and moaning over there. And, you know, Dave, I invite you this month, the 23rd, 24th, and 25th, which is a weekend, I'm on call. And if you'd like to come to my house and spend the night on my couch and get up at 3 in the morning to go put someone back in bed, you're welcome to come and join just to see what we do.
You wait until after this decision
the old
tonight.
Saying,
you don't want him on your couch. He's snoring. You will not sleep.
The old saying that...
We've slept together. That's why he said that.
The old saying that don't judge a man till you walk him out on his moccasins really holds true. So before you go and make comments like that, you know, about all the whining and everything over there, I think you really need to do some more in-depth talking to the guys before you make something like that. And I just wanted to say, like, I do this because it's fun. I like training the guys. As operations captain, I'm in charge of all the engineers in the department. I think we have some really good engineers in this department. And that's all I really have to say. Just, like I said, I don't need this. I do it because it's fun. All right? Thanks a lot for your time.
Ron hit it on the
head. Thank you, Randy.
Ron, when Ron said that we're not talking about you guys, it's the 25% of the training calls and 1% of the emergency calls. That's the guys we're talking about. You're the ones here listening to it, but we're talking about the people that aren't stepping up to the plate. That's the difference.
Oh, Dave,
we
stop.
Dave, stop.
No.
Okay.
The only thing I want to put out is if that person's 1% is at the right time, it is a godsend of a 1%. That's what we want you to understand. Even if it's only 1% and I'm doing CPR by myself, that 1% is a godsend. Or if it's a 400-pound patient coming down from the second story. So we got the choice of, we can tell these people, all right, you're not making 75%, you're not making 25%, we're going to clear your slot for a volunteer that is somewhere in the future that we got to invest about 200 hours of training in before they're useful to the department and take away whatever they were given. Or we can try to find an incentive program, a positive incentive program that says, we value you, please come down more. That's what we're trying to do. But sometimes 1%, if it's at the right time, it's essential to do the job. 14% until we find a way to get everybody up to 75% and 25%. And I've been on your fire department for 12 years now, and this issue has been there from day one when I came till now. And we try to find ways, we address it, we get the response up. Things change, it gets old for people, and the response goes down. So we're at a slump right now trying to get people. We're trying to find a new way to inspire people to come down for calls. But just because somebody only made 1% doesn't necessarily mean they didn't add value to the fire department.
And that 1% might not be in the department anymore because we try to keep a constant 28, but they come and they go. Sometimes because they find other places, other jobs or other communities, and sometimes we do just like you say. You know, it's time to move on if you're not going to participate. And so it's constantly changing. We have our eye on it. This isn't an eye-opener to us. I mean, we fully well understand what's going on in that department.
John, go ahead.
Lance, thanks for your comments. That was very insightful. And to the gentleman who said he's on the fire department because it's fun, we do this job because it's fun, too.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me, John. Sometimes I forget.
Well, I know we have an insight committee. Oversight. Oversight committee. Insight, yeah. Maybe it's time. Maybe we need to do this every once a year or something. Maybe we need some dialogue. Maybe we just need to sit down with you guys, and maybe we need to hear what you've got to say. Maybe there's different answers. Like some of the things I've thought about as you've been talking, why couldn't we have a 40 or 50-member roster? I don't know if that's feasible. That way, maybe you, like the chief says, if you have five people you get on the roster, you get one response out of five. Maybe we need to have a bigger roster instead of getting rid of people, or maybe there is an incentive to get some of these people that are not responding as much. I don't know what that incentive is, and I know the chief's trying to rally those people with this incentive pay. The other thing I've thought about when I listen to those calls at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning when you got to go put somebody back in bed. And I've wondered this for 8 or 9 years since Bob Castle was here. Is there a way that we can start telling those people, look, we'll come out there, but we're going to have to start charging you for these miscellaneous calls? And I don't know if maybe that goes against the whole fire service, but I know there are communities that do charge for ambulance service, and it's all wrapped into water bills and things like that, and they call it a insurance or something. And maybe there's ways to do that. Maybe that is something that we need to do so that we do have more money in our fire department that goes directly to the fire department. Maybe those are some things that the oversight committee can look at, or maybe you guys even have some insight into that.
The charging fees for different things is a good idea, and we've gone through that whole fee program. But when an 80-year-old person falls on the floor and they need to get up, there's a good chance they won't call if they think they have to pay, and they're just going to lay there. And, just as decent human beings, we respond on that.
Well, the one thing I was thinking about, and not necessarily that they're not going to call, but maybe they would call a relative or a friend instead of the fire department when it's something that simple. And of course,
until anyone going to bed.
Anybody
Hold on,
else
that's to complain about?
Steve, anybody else want to speak to this item? We still have some more responses, I think.
Hi, my name's Sean McMahon. I'm an engineer for River Beach Fire. I just wanted to kind of wrap up some things, some of your questions. How you're saying we need to get our other fellow firefighters pull their shifts up, make them better. We're all involved in other things besides this fire department. We have guys going to paramedic school that can't give out 110% to the fire department. It's our job as a family and as friends to help them out. And what Mr. Eckbaum said about $9 would bring an extra firefighter down. I was on the structure fire the other night, and if I hope that $9 would bring someone down, because
I agree.
Yeah, because
I don't know if it will.
We're lucky. We're very lucky. Thank you.
Thanks.
Anybody else? Seeing nobody, bring it back to the council for deliberation.
I'd like to make a motion with a slight change. I see on Exhibit A of the salary schedule, Section 5 says volunteer firefighter compensation. When I make a motion, I'd like that to be changed to paid call. So I'll make a motion that we adopt Resolution number 0273 to revise the compensation for job classes in the fire service for the city of Grover Beach with the change as mentioned in Section 5 of Exhibit A.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Roll call vote, please.
Yes.
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 Yes. Unanimously passes.
And I want to thank you guys for the dialogue. I really appreciate it. I mean, it is good. It's really good. We need to know what you're thinking, and I think it was valuable.
I was just wondering, on a point of clarification, on your oversight committee, is there going to be a request for Oceana to provide a letter that says they are going to be meeting the county's minimum standards?
We'll raise the discussion. I think we'll talk about this attachment. Can't read that far. One or whatever. We're saying okay. This came to our attention and we'd like to discuss it.
Thank you.
And we'll report back.
Thank you.
Before we leave that whole issue, I would like to start up some kind of a citizen, something like a CATS program for the fire department. I would like to start volunteering. I'd like to have a scanner. I'd like to have a volunteer jacket, and I'm going to start responding to calls. And I would like to know what I'm not talking about going to the station and jumping on an engine or something, but I would like to respond to the calls and see exactly what is going on and how two ambulance people and two people from Oceano and two people from Grover isn't plenty for a call. Those type of things. So I would like to know what liabilities I'm creating by responding to a call, and what rights I would have on that property when I respond to somebody's home portage. Maybe there is something that we can do. So I would like to see this, if it has to be agendized, to start a new volunteer group. I'd like to see that done. Or if we can just informally start this, I'd like to see it done as fast as we can.
I think you need to talk to maybe you need to talk to Chief Criswell on a private basis on that and see what his idea is. It could be a real nightmare. It's really kind of a good thing with the police department. With the fire department, I'm not so sure that, other than maybe helping some lady back into bed in the middle of the night and being a...
Well, I have an invitation to go. I can have a place to sleep.
That's true.
I'd like to make it a little more formal.
But, you know, without the proper turnouts and things like that, unless you're going to be someone that directs traffic or helps just to lift bodies, I think you're a liability. And those guys may reverberate that. Because I've been on calls, but I don't, you know, I go out there, but I stay away from any of the action because, first of all, I don't want to get in their way.
I don't want to get in their way either. That's the point about.
But I think it is good to have the knowledge to see what they do. Mm-hmm. That is very good.
Well,
you can borrow my scanner.
I'll go buy one. I think the city should furnish me one.
Okay.
And anybody else that would like to offer their assistance, if it's so sorely needed that we can't get anybody to show up for these.
Thank you, Steve. I think on something like that this would be no difference in the CATS program. You'd have to go through so many hours of training before you could even get on that piece of property with a jacket that says Grover Beach Volunteer. You'd have to go through hours of training.
Okay, let's
just
start.
Just like these guys and be certified and the whole bit, just like the CATS do.
I would like to say it's you know, as a council member, you're more than welcome to have a scanner and come on the calls, as long as you stay back out of the way. I don't know what the legalities of going into someone's home. Probably can't do that, but you're more than welcome to come and watch us do our operations anytime you'd like, and we will supply you with a scanner. In order to start doing anything, then you're going to fall under the requirements these guys are. And you're going to end up spending the first 6 months in an academy. And after that, you'll be on probation for another year.
I'm not talking about becoming a volunteer fireman.
You'll be 90 years old by the time you...
I'm talking about...
Wait,
yes.
How old, Chief?
I missed it.
So did I.
That's all right.
I don't think you could do this in 6 months.
Well, like I say, you are more than welcome to have a radio listen to what we're doing, and after the call is over, talk with us, ask us questions.
Well, even the part about responding at 3 in the morning, going to somebody's house or wherever they are, what are the liabilities involved in that? I don't know. And I wouldn't have to resolve them tonight, but I would like to see us look at that option. If we are now going from volunteer firemen to paid fire call, maybe we should have a volunteer citizens supportive group.
Right. Like the mayor said, he comes to the calls, and he stands back. He sees anything he wants to see, and he's more than...
But I said, you know, and he called two or three times for assistance, and I said, man, it's two blocks from my house. I should get my rear out of bed and go help.
If we're having so much trouble getting people to respond, there should be some way that we can get some level of training for citizens to participate. So we don't have to fight the fire. We don't have to give them CPR. We don't have to do any life-threatening issues. But we can.
Yeah, well, other than traffic control or
pizza.
Yeah, pizza. I don't know what else you can do because you need to be trained.
In your next life, Dave, you can come as a Dalmatian. Ride the truck.
I just want the jacket. I don't want to get up at 3 in the morning.
Man, yours would be expensive.
See, and I'm thinking about the badge.
Well, I just want to make 1% of the calls anyway. So.
I'm thinking about the badge. Okay, we beat that to death.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thanks again. Okay. Council committee reports. Does anyone have anything?
None. Skate Park Advisory Board. We met last week.
We now have the signage. You know, we're hoping to sell signage that's electronic now, so we can start emailing it to the bigger companies. Chris from the YMCA, who you've met in staff reports here, is moving to Sacramento, which I feel is a big loss because he's great. And he's being replaced by another individual whose name I didn't write down. Nice enough fellow. But the transition's going to be rough. We had actually one of the advisory board members witness a real issue with staffing problems where it sounded like it was going back to the days of old. The YMCA counselor was in a vehicle talking to friends, and the kids in the park were being bullied, and the old behavior was returning. So that was communicated to the YMCA, and they're kind of challenged right now to just develop their own staffing criteria. So other than that, things are working well. They're looking at doing some long-term wish list for improvements to the park. I don't know if you've been by there lately. It's got a weed problem and some other stuff. So maybe looking to organize some volunteer effort to go in there and keep it cleaned up. That's all I have.
Let the kids smoke it.
Come on.
Okay. City manager's agenda. There's none at this time. City council agenda. We're going to consider identifying the content of the agenda for the regular city council meeting of September 15th. So, where are we going there?
I have something from our attorney. I want to pass on the way into that.
Wait a minute, there's no way. That's too short to come from the attorney.
And actually, I guess you can pass those on. I apologize if this isn't exactly what everybody talked about, but the idea was to have, as it is stated here, hold a public forum to listen and discuss community concerns. We wanted it very simple. There's no presentation from department heads about how wonderful we are. The point is, come and tell us what your concerns are. We'd love to address them, resolve them. If we can't, we will take whatever steps are necessary, which might even include saying we can't deal with that.
I like it.
Done issue or whatever.
Someone here who I can go. Kathy, could you respond to that?
Mm-hmm. It's a full city council meeting.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's a regular council meeting. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. We'll.
But like Mike Ford and community development and all those people be here too?
Well, yes. We'll have directors and we can try to have Mike here. I can't think of who else besides directors, Kathy.
Here is our agenda. I'm sorry, I didn't pass it out, too, but it only has that one item. And then it's a regular city council meeting. If there are no citizen concerns, it'll be a very short meeting because there's no reason for us to make any long presentations or anything. So.
I think it looks really good, Dave. Good job.
Thank Martin.
Well, whoever, you guys did it. It's a good job. As a matter of fact, yesterday in Miners, someone asked me when this was, what was going to happen and when it was going, and John Fielder basically asked me. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of input we want.
Yes.
It's good. Anybody else have any? We're at...
I think you just have to keep reminding people that no decision can be made. It's just...
Mm-hmm. And it won't drag on for hours. Our mayor certainly will be empowered to say, we can't deal with that tonight, or we've already talked enough about it, and move on. And so hopefully it won't be bogged down by the first issue. We will cover everybody's issues if there are any.
Are you going to time limit the issues?
No, just by feel, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure that Mr. Scholes will be telling me when to move things along.
It's America, though.
Yes, it is. Okay, we're back to public communications unless anybody wants to talk more about item 14. Okay, public communications. It doesn't look like
it's any public.
Police chief doesn't have anything to say today, or usually he sometimes he makes those public communication items. Council communications. I had one item. John had mentioned that he had some inquiries about our estate property and what's happening down there. And I'm thinking maybe it's time to re-agendize that whole issue of the state property and maybe go back out and find some RFPs. If King Associates are not moving forward, maybe it's time to reevaluate that and either bring them in and have them give us an idea of what they can do for us, if they're going to do anything, if they're not going to do anything. Maybe there's other people out there, and maybe we need to go out for another RFP or RFQ or whatever we did before. And maybe we need to re-agendize that.
I agree. Or maybe it's just to say that all options are open. I mean, anybody that has something is welcome. But,
well, I think it would be nice to get some feedback from King Associates, for instance, yeah. or yeah. King Ventures, rather, and see what...
Restaurant use only.
Perhaps I could answer that. The restaurant and the golf course are both part of concessions that the state has let for use of the property on the beach. And the concession that includes the restaurant includes part of the parking lot as part of that concession. So it may be in that context that they are restricting access to the parking that's closest to the restaurant, which is where that defined concession area is.
Actually, at one time, they even had a kiosk there, and they were making people pay. And that was part of the concession because the state had required that at one time. And the concessionaire, who was still the concessionaire, but was basically before he was working for a canteen company, basically went back to the state and said, hey, you know, we're paying more money for someone to sit at that kiosk than we're bringing in. We just can't afford to do this anymore. So the state took that requirement back away from the concessionaire. But I do believe they do have control of the whole parking lot, because whether they're as a concessionaire. So I think they can do that. And it's probably during the peak hours, they probably figure that, you know, they want the restaurant to be used by the parking to be used near the restaurant by the people that are going to actually go in the restaurant so that they can make a dollar or two.
I figured it's so state maintained and we own where the palm trees and everything else is around there. That
actually, the city's actually put some maintenance in down there, too.
Yes,
I don't know if you
do.
Remember that, but we did that, and it's the concessionaire is required to do all the maintenance and keep that up. If I remember reading their contract at one time, they were required to maintain it. That's part of the concession.
Parking lot and restrooms and all that.
Uh-huh,
yeah,
everything,
all the,
yeah. Landscaping, yeah.
A question with regard to the item that we bring back to the council. I know that at one time there was an ad hoc committee made up of, I think, a couple of council members and mm-hmm. some staff members, and I'm wondering whether it might be a good idea to resurrect the ad hoc committee, because it sounded like some of the issues like dealing with King Ventures and so on, it might be appropriate for some combination of council members and staff to start that process as a perhaps jumping in with both feet.
The ad hoc committee and staff are all gone.
Rich, Peter, and Arlene. Isn't that the three?
I think the city manager is saying, though, that this council would do an ad hoc committee made up of ourselves. And maybe we could just invite King Ventures to give us a presentation and see where they're at, see if they're still interested, and if they're not, maybe then we go to an ad hoc committee and say, what can we do? I mean, I think, why don't we hear from King Ventures first? What does anybody else think? I mean,
my personal opinion on the King Ventures thing is I don't think anything material has happened. I mean, you look, drive through this county, I was at Lake Nacimiento in the middle of nowhere. King Ventures has a shopping center coming soon in the middle of nowhere. I think King Ventures has so many little fires going on in their development world that I just...
That ad hoc committee with someone who's got energy, see if we can't get in there and do what they did before and help facilitate. So I would certainly volunteer to be on the committee. And
I was just going
to
say yes, John.
Yes.
You go after him. Go get him.
Well, I'm one.
I'll pony up. I'll do it, unless someone else wants to. You want to go, Mayor?
Oh, no. I'm going to be responding to fire calls.
Don't get me started.
So I guess the consensus will form an ad hoc committee with Councilmember Lieberman and myself. I'm wondering if Planning Commissioner Versa is still around. She'd be interested.
What I would propose that the next meeting, we'll bring this item as an agenda item.
Okay.
Perhaps
yes, would you agendize that?
Certainly.
Okay, sounds good to me.
Thanks.
Any other council communication?
One other thing that I was actually going to just sit back and quiet for the rest of the evening, but we had the I'm curious to know where we are with the we were talking about hiring a financial planner. We had a representative from A.J. Edwards come in and give a very good presentation, and I think Councilman Regbaum asked a very good question about credit rating. Do we need to have that person hired before we do that, or is that something we can do on our own? And I'm wondering that, to try and follow up from that presentation if there's something that we can do and if there's anyone who thinks we ought to consider going down that road.
What'd you say?
No pun intended, right?
I guess there's a combination of things. One is that what we would be borrowing the money for is kind of an unknown at this point. And so it seems like the first step would be to try to get a handle on just how big the problem is and help and break that into either bite-sized chunks or to say, yeah, the total project, if we were to pave all the local streets is $18 million, then maybe that's something we can do all at one time. So it seems like that's the first step. The financial advisor concept we could perhaps be doing on a parallel basis of doing RFPs for that if we're asking the city engineer, for example, to update an estimate of what our street refurbishment cost might be. And on a parallel basis, we could be going through an RFP for a financial advisor. And then once that firm is on board, then we can go through the steps that include the rating agency exercise. That a lot of what that exercise has to do with is how much money you want to borrow compared to how much your ongoing resources are. And so we have to answer that fundamental question first.
Pismo is actually in the same realm at this point. They're actually talking about doing the same thing. They're talking about $6 million for their streets. And we might even want to dialogue with them and kind of work out some of these problems together.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we can cover all of our streets. So I don't care if the number is $15 million or $30 million. I don't suppose that we can afford to bond for that kind of money no matter what. So maybe we should be just looking at our own finances and say, how much could we, do we feel that we could afford to pay back on some kind of bond issue per year?
Well, and I think that's what Ron had said to start with, that we were dedicated between $300,000 and $500,000 a year on streets. So why don't we look at what that would do, what that payment would do over a period of time if we got the lump sum now. I mean, basically, and that's basically what you're saying, and that's kind of what Ron said when we first started this project.
It's going to be simpler than looking at how much would it cost to fix our street.
Right.
I don't think we're going to be able to approach that.
Well, thank you for jumping in over there. I thought you had asked that great question, and I wanted to follow up.
Okay. So, yeah, well, what you'd like us to do then is to do RFPs and get a financial advisor on board and have that person or firm deal with the process. That's fine if we want to tell them that we're looking at $300,000 to $500,000 a year or some form of revenue enhancement. We can bring that back.
Any more council communications?
Maybe okay. We'll discuss this at the next meeting.
Right.
Let me give us one thought.
Okay, if there are no more council communications, we'll move into class set.
Would the council like staff to agendize that item for next council meeting?
I think so. Is that?
No, I don't think I was asking for it to be agendized. I think in council communications at the next meeting, I think I'd like to be a little more organized.
Okay. There is no more council communication. We'll move into closed session. We have five items. We're dealing with five items in closed session. Conference of Labor Negotiator, and we're going to be dealing with a unrepresented employee group. Number two, Conference with Labor Negotiator. Who are we dealing with, Holly? They're not the same, right? They're a city manager.
Part-time employees, we've got management, confidential, and executive management.
Part-time, okay. Part-time employees, management, and confidential employees, executive management. Those are the first three that we're dealing with. And then we have a fourth one, conference and legal counsel, pending litigation, Rucker versus the city of Grover Beach, versus Huey, whoever that is, right? And then five, conference with legal counselor, pending litigation, Jensen versus the city of Grover Beach. And at this point, we will adjourn to closed session.